thank for coming this morning under difficult circumstances. We're just waiting for Mr. Morgan, and Honorable Morgan is here. And yeah, no, the time is about 10 o'clock now. We delayed, we stayed a minute because we had to correct, since we'll be dealing with the finances of the financial situation of the department, strategic outputs. So it is very important that at least we have sufficient members of parliament in the committee. And welcome back, department. Seems as if you'll be part of us for the whole of this month, looking at the program in front of me. Yeah, and this is a continuation of the meeting that we had last week, because we could not finish some of the presentation that we're supposed to have got from the department. So without any waste of time, because we've already wasted 30 minutes, I'm sure by now we know each other, unless there are some new people then besides the people that were here last week. DG, I'll be guided by yourself.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. Good morning, Honorable Members. We have the media liaison officer in the office of the Minister, Mr. And then also the Chief of Staff in the office of the Deputy Minister, Vic Tambiyo. Thank you very much, Chair.
All right. Thanks very much, Chair. I'm sure now that you have two gentlemen from the Ministry, we'll have then to introduce ourselves as members of Parliament. Within a minute, I will ask members of Parliament just quickly introduce themselves. I will start here by Honourable Morgan.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Gareth Morgan from the Democratic Alliance.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning all. My name is Annette Lovemore from the Democratic Alliance.
Morning, Chairperson and members of the department. I'm Zugile Luyenge, a member of the ANC. Thank you.
Morning, Chairperson and the members. My name is James Shims Kosana JJ, member of the ANC. Thank you.
Chairperson and members and the department. Hilda Ndude is my name, from the Congress of the People. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was quick, within that 1 minute. I'm sure that there will be some other members who will join us, because I see that from the ruling party, we've got only 2 members. So I don't know what happened to the women of this country, because the women that belong to this committee are not here. Maybe they've gone to fetch water. All right, and then my name is Maggie. I'm supposed to be chairing this committee, Water and Environmental Affairs. I always like to say I'm from a very beautiful province. That is the Free State province. All right, thanks, Acting DG. Without any waste of time, then you can take us through.
Thanks, Chair. I'm going to hand over to the CFO to do the presentation for finance, and Mr. Max Tibela will do the presentation for monitoring and evaluation. I will do the presentation for corporate services and the implications of water on the State of the Nation address. Thank you.
Chairperson, honorable members, I will take you briefly around finance. The first part of my presentation will focus on the what finance in the department does. And then from there, I will give an overview of the budgetary allocations and other things that are related to that for the department. As a unit within the program administration of the department, we are financial management is part of administration, which of course under administration, when you look at the budget we ask funds for, it includes the minister, and currently now Deputy Minister, Corporate Services and Property Management, which is mainly facilities management in that case. besides that, within financial management, obviously, what we focus on are issues around supply chain, mainly provisioning and asset management issues reside with us, especially the accounting aspect of it. We have revenue and debtors. I will elaborate on that one briefly. And financial accounting, obviously, falls under that particular branch, including management accounting, which deals with budgets and expenditure monitoring and things that go with that. Now, revenue here mainly comes from before the changes in the macro government organization, we do sell some forestry products. Obviously, we collect revenue, and that revenue ends up with the National Revenue Fund. But besides that, the bulk water infrastructure we have, we collect water levies on the from the water users linked to this particular bulk water infrastructure, and in which case we have debtors and revenue in this respect. That's where debtors come in. So debtor management and revenue management are key aspects of the function of the Office of the CFO. Now, the previous years, specifically the previous 2 years, we had challenges, and those challenges obviously had to be addressed through certain initiatives. So briefly, what I've given you on that particular slide that is before you is a question of what is it that we can say as a branch we contributed to. We contributed to the separation of the two accounts within the department, and the two accounts here is the main account, which is the Vote 34, and the water trading entity. The water trading entity, this is where we collect the revenue, the refurbishment of the schemes, and the CMAs that are yet to be established, the catchment management areas, and et cetera. That's where the water trading entity fits in. Now, we had to separate that. The reason why we emphasize is a bit of it is an achievement, in the sense that previously it was treated as one department, and before you, one operates within that department. One is inclined to believe that this is just like another department. I, for one, I came from National Treasury before, and I thought it was just like National Treasury, but it turned out it's a totally different setting with its own challenges, and hence the separation, and even the audit qualification and disclaimers originated from the fact that the separation between the two entities was a problem. And still it poses a challenge, which obviously we are happy to say we have made the significant movements, as you will see from the annual report we'll table to you in due course after the end of this month. There were issues obviously around financial management in terms of capacity. Before I was recruited to the department had one CFO, one chief director, and three directors. As we are seated here right now, we can talk of 13 directors. So those are things that we had if we were to go over the problems we had around capacity. A related issue which we had to lead as finance, it was the issue around verification and valuation of major bulk water supply assets. When we were here last time, I saw you were keen to see how service delivery is being done by the department. The truth of the matter is that previously we would not comfortably answer the question around service delivery without knowing where those assets were. So from 2007 until the end of last financial year, which ended on 31st March 2009, we embarked into an aggressive campaign exercise to verify our assets where they were and attach value on those particular assets, and to assess their condition in terms of are they in usable form or they need to be decommissioned and etc. Of course, that led to the creation of an asset register, which was a point of concern by the AG, that we didn't have a complete asset register. It's something obviously we have made progress on, and the auditors have audited the asset register this year, and it will be evident from the audit report of what the outcome is, whether they are happy with that asset register or not. The development of financial management process was another issue. Though being a public sector organization, what happened is that previously it was treated just like another, whereby cash basis of accounting, you record income when you receive cash and you record your expenses when you pay for them. Now, that would not have applied on the water trading entity. That's why the issue of separation of water trading and main account at the beginning becomes crucial. It became necessary that we develop distinct processes for main account, which is for the use of voted funds, and distinct business process and procedures for the water trading entity in order to manage the bulk water infrastructure, which is under water trading, and to manage the revenue that comes out of the users that are linked to those particular schemes. So that was something that was not there before 2007. It wasn't there. And that's why if you go back to the history, you will find that there was a disclaimer at one stage on the Department of Finances. It was solely because the auditors could not express an opinion at all on the finances, because the financial management process and policies could not enable management to distinguish what was trading and what was main account and etc. Linked to that, obviously, is the issue of the system. The main account uses the basic accounting system, popularly known as BAS. But then the water trading entity, because it has to comply with the International Financial Reporting Accounting Standards, we had to implement Enterprise Resource Planning System, and in this case here, it's known as SAP, Systems Applications Products, which is an enterprise resource planning system where we capture all our ledger, our asset register, and etc. They are captured on that particular system. Affecting the main account, although this will no longer be our problem right now, although it was a problem in the past, given that forestry is moving out, the issue around biological assets, and our biological assets in this case here were the plantations, forestry plantations, which we have cultivated, and of course we had indigenous, so we had to verify also and value or attach value to those particular biological assets. And the biological assets here, may I emphasize, is the cultivated forests in the plantations, which also one area that we had to lead as a branch to ensure that we meet the reporting requirements from the Office of the Auditor General. Of course, against that background, there have been challenges. I've alluded to the fact that there were unqualified audits, unqualified audit issues in the previous financial years, which we have made a good progress on that, and an integrated financial system, especially for main account. What this means is that a cash-based accounting, a basic accounting system like SAP, like BAS, a basic accounting system, it does not interface very easily with the other systems, such that when, for example, I'll give an example, if we were to award a tender today, and 3 months down the line, you want me to tell you immediately what has been paid against that tender, I will not be able to do that. I'll require 2-3 days for me to do that. That's what I mean by that particular challenge being there, specifically on the main exchequer account. It's not a problem on water trading, because water trading uses an integrated financial system. Minimal transformation in terms of systems, of course, I've alluded to them in terms of process that we had to develop and ensure that people embrace them or the staff embrace them. Financial governance issues. We don't have a province equivalent, and what we do in the head office must uniformly be applied in the regions. So the question comes in, where do the, let's say, the managers executing financial transaction in the 9 regions or the operational clusters, in the operational clusters report? I think maybe, Chair, let me pause there, because this is a matter that we'll keep on coming back to you from time to time. Apart from the 9 regions, you know, administratively aligned to the political boundaries, or administrative provincial boundaries, we have 4 operational clusters under water trading entity. This is where we have water users and the bulk water infrastructure that has been developed. So those particular, any water user like Eskom, Sasso, will be operating on a scheme or a water resource project which is within one of those particular 4 operational clusters, central being the largest, the central being the valve system, where the valve system is. We then have 4 construction clusters. You can call them sites if you want, but in our terminology, we call them clusters. Again, in those areas, there's some financial transactions that go in those clusters, each of those clusters. Then you come in on the 9 regions, now what we call the 9 regions. This is now where the policy and regulation enforcement things go through. So the construction aspect of our work goes through the 4 construction clusters. Our operation of water resource infrastructure that has already been built and which has registered water users, it takes place through 4 operational clusters. Now, there is a financial governance challenge in that case. which comes with that, and which you need to keep on as oversight to be told exactly what is happening. I saw some of the questions you asked last time. They were hinging on some of the financial governance issues that relate to that particular type of configuration. Traditionally, constructions were driven by engineers and not necessarily financial experts. That's a fact that you need to live with and which we need to transform from. The same engineers, again, are the ones who are in charge of the operational clusters. Finance, in the way I've told you, from before 2002, had only one CFO. That CFO was meant to look at the voted funds. He had nothing to do, by the way, very little to do with even revenue from those operational clusters. Very little. It is after 2006 that the revenue function actually moved to be under the finance function. But all other things had traditionally been done within those particular four clusters. So when I say about financial governance challenges, I'm trying to address the question of what are these challenges? The challenges arise from the nature in which the Department of Water Affairs is configured, even at present, in terms of its administration and in terms of its delivery of services. Next slide, Bob. There are obviously systems that require implementation and post-implementation and user requirements. Those ones we are attending to them. I've alluded to the enterprise resource planning software. Is SAP the full term for SAP? Is systems applications product? Is just a software, just like another software you'll want to have, like Oracle? Logis is our logistic procurement. Is where we procure our goods from, especially on main account. The issues around inadequate skills, especially on financial management. This is a situation we got there. It's not everywhere, but Eastern Cape and certain sections of Limpopo will have this problem, especially in the regions. The staff we inherited from the homeland, some of them are in that area. And like in Eastern Cape alone, there are about 10 to 13 officials that... I doubt whether, maybe it's me who is impatient, I doubt whether I would be able to train them to understand even simple bookkeeping. So what I read that issue is something that is historical, but it's something in management. We have identified the problem and we are trying to address it. Improperly linked, I think I've alluded to the issue of segregation of between main account and the water trading entity. That was a challenge. We developed a policy, and that's the policy that we ensure that is implemented. And when we link a staff to either main account and trading entity, the activities that official does must be budgeted for to either main account or water trading. So those are refinements that we need to go through in order to ensure that the functions are well linked and the staff are also properly linked to either the main account or to the water trading entity. There is a challenge of extensive infrastructure. You may have picked it up from the presentation by my colleague, Dr. Ritters, when he talked about the spread, where the infrastructure is and the areas with the water shortages and its all that. The bank infrastructure has been verified. In 2007 and 8 audit, the AG found the methodology we used to have been sound. What we were left to do on the bulk infrastructure was for us to effect certain refinements in terms of reassessment of the useful life, reassessment of the value. When we reported in that particular year, we reported an asset base, just bulk infrastructure alone, of about $63 billion. After the refinement, that figure came to 58, and they have audited that figure. So in the audit report, you will get after the, as part of the annual report at the end of this month, it will include the audit covered this particular infrastructure that I'm referring to. The magnitude, obviously, it had its own challenges, the magnitude and et cetera. It was large, and I must tell you that for us to have verified and valued those assets, canals and et cetera, we spend approximately $47 million to do that verification exercise. There are figures which are there. They didn't go into an individual's pocket in Lindwurf. They went to the service provider, which is a combination of, it's the first time I saw accountants and engineers working together of different disciplines. Now, our intention, by the way, our intention when you are doing that exercise, the final ultimate thing, we want to have asset management plan on a scheme level, which can be audited on a five-year cycle basis. Whether the auditor general will have that capacity is another matter that we don't know, but we are aware it's happening elsewhere, and therefore it can be done in this country. That's the vision we have when it comes to infrastructure assets. So this just gives you a clue of the spread in terms of the, not really the spread, but what we found out when we did the verification. They have been captured on an asset register in terms of 240 schemes, 334 dams. Those are the canals. We could only measure them by way of kilometers. Tunnels, we measure them by way of kilometers. There are pipelines and many other assets that we found, but which we needed to have different components on our asset register with estimated useful life and related value on each of those major categories of assets. We don't just lump them together as the infrastructure asset in this case. There is, of course, 264 hectares of substitute, the area around the dams and all that, which obviously form part of our intangible asset. They are not part of the 58 billion that I've talked about, by the way. They are outside the 58 billion that I've alluded to earlier. Of course, when it comes to water trading entity, the challenges that came to the fore out of that exercise of the infrastructure verification and evaluation, we realized that there was a period in the department or in the country in general whereby there was construction. As a result of that, there is a refurbishment and betterment backlog. We have estimated that to be plus minus 10 billion. That does not necessarily mean that you will spend 10 billion in one given year. It will have to be spread over the year. We have already started discussions with the National Treasury to see if our revenue base does not enable us to clear this backlog, is there a possibility of recommendation from the Exchequer? There is insufficient funding. Of course, that backlog arises also from the fact that there is capping. Within our pricing strategy, the irrigation sector, the farmers, we cap the extent to which we can increase the price. We have estimated that there is a potential loss of income of that particular money of 4.4 billion per annum, which results from this particular price capping. It's in effect and in substance a price subsidization to the farmers. This message has never gone to National Treasury until we went through this exercise. And that's why we are now able to confidently have a conversation, and we won't mind having that conversation, including yourself, on the matter. Because that pricing capping amounts to a price subsidization to a major sector in the country, or if at all it's not major, but considered to be a key player within our economy, the agricultural sector. That's where that particular one comes in. So if we do not realize the revenue we need, because as far as I'm concerned, a pricing strategy or a pricing policy must serve two dual purposes. One, to infuse certain behavior in terms of consumption, make people use this one as an economic resource. Two, to raise enough money to maintain the same facilities that avail this particular service. Now, that particular purpose, this capping does not enable us to raise the necessary money to do the refurbishment and betterment that we are required to do if we have to sustain the same level of service. Of course, there are customer complaints over the water, the raw water tariff increases, especially the one we tried to effect after we verified the assets. There is, within our pricing strategy, there is the depreciation charge and return on assets. So when you use the percentage given the pricing strategy, obviously the users found it a bit of a high increase, and in which case, given that we are to contribute the stimulus plan of the country, we are actually to reduce it at one stage. But that means that we are sacrificing something in the process, especially the budget for the refurbishment. There are questions, obviously, around the multiple roles of the WT within DWARF, because remember, this is not a legal entity. It is an accounting entity within the administration of the department. So we are seen by the water users. We are playing the role of a regulator. We are again the custodian of the water resources. We are at the same time the planners. We are at the same time constructor. Now, that one has come through, and we are being posed by that challenge that this particular element should have to be separated. If you have not engaged with the current Financial Fiscal Commission recommendations on the 2010 DORA, they are raising also this issue in those particular recommendations, which means they have done their work and they have picked it up also. Whether DWARF should continue the way it is, or the regulatory and the policy function must be distinct from the water resource management and also even setting the price, because we are, again, the same ones who set the price and tell the water user, you're going to pay us 20 cents per kiloliter of water. So there are those who are saying, no, you can't be a referee and a player at the same time. Of course, organizational technical capacity, which is eroded, additional funding must be made available in order to attract skills. The revenue base will include the money we collect for on the behalf of TCTA. We are talking of a revenue base of not less than $5 billion. Because TCTA, amount that we went to the TCTA for the year that has been audited is close to $2.6 billion. Now, but when you look at the resource base, it's just like another public sector. Chief director, like a few of the directors in the regions, you'll have an assistant director, and etc. That particular, it doesn't commensurate with the amount of asset base we are managing and the revenue base we needed to be managing. The systems, I think I've alluded to, unsatisfactory financial management system, which we're working on, and the issue that if we do not address the issue of pricing and the collection of the money out of the pricing strategy, that price capping element, the negative cash flow can be a problem. But so far, in the last 2 years, the cash flow from the operations is positive. When you get your annual report and you look at the cash flow statement, you'll notice that the cash flow from the operation is positive. Is the cash flow, when you combine now the cash flow from the operation with the cash flow on the investment activity, that you find there is a negative cash flow, because we are required to invest more in the infrastructure than we are receiving from the operations. That's the challenge we are having, and we'll not hide from that. Now, strategically, if you look at the strategy of the department, we contribute to the area of improvement of financial management, because we need to be part of the transparency systems, improve financial governance, and of course contribute to organizational growth and development by making DWARF be value-driven and effective and responsive department within the national government. The rationale of selecting those areas we have talked about, we were informed by the previous qualified audit reports and the issues that came from those particular audit reports. And I've alluded to them when I was speaking, like around segregation of function between water trading entity and main accounts, issues around assets, performance. By the way, in the audit report, although they did not express opinion, they have also done a performance information audit. So we are informed, whatever we plan to do going ahead, we are informed by the content of the AG report in particular. Of course, financial management, from the Northern standards that are come by the PSMA implementation, financial management is viewed as a crucial to the successful functioning of the organization, in the sense that we need to relate the financial resources that are available to the organization to the key mandate of the department. In terms of the going forward, in terms of our funding, in overall for the unit alone, the branch alone, this is the budget allocation we are operating with. And you'll notice that the substantial portion of this is the compensation of employees, if you look at that. So we're emphasizing compensation of employees. The initiatives we have taken so far to improve our financial management has relied previously on consultants. A model that we say we promise ourselves, come 31st of July, we are not having those individuals with us. We need to replace them with full-time staff. Under goods and services, of course, people put many things under goods and services. That is mainly the money that goes to AG. That budget rests to the office of the finance officer, and it's about $18 million in any given year. That's what we spend, and you'll see it disclosed in the annual financial statement, the amount we pay for audit, for the annual audit. We review our work in finance by looking at the milestones that we have achieved in the plan that was formulated, or which we revise from time to time. After the AG has done the audit, we formulate a plan, and the milestone we achieve in that audit plan is what we measure ourselves against. Then, of course, there are biweekly meetings with the specific projects where we review our outputs. And obviously, as a department, we contribute to the department by doing the in-ear monitoring of the financial information, the early warning system. That's what we use in order to see whether we are on track or we are not on track, as the case may be. I'm now on the department, unless there is any question. That was specifically to the branch. What I've spoken about is specifically to the finance branch as part of the administration program within the department. The trend we have as a department on the exchequer funds, what you have is exchequer funds, shows that the department has never spent 100% of its budget. and that's explained mainly by the construction projects we implement. Like in 2007 and 8, that was an expenditure on the Dihoub Dam. The same story appears on the 2006 and 7, the delays that were there. More or less, again, the same matter on 2008 and 9. That's mainly, but the rest of the other section of the budget we spend according to the plan. So the key contributor to an expenditure, especially in the last 3 years, has had to do with infrastructure development. And one other thing is that we usually, that's where you'll pick up the rollovers. And I would like honorable members to understand the rollover in the context in which it was designed for. Not for managers to fold their hands and not spend the money and explain themselves later, but it's a budget management exercise in the sense that if you allow managers to disperse money for the sake of them achieving 100, you will end up them having advance payments being made to the service providers, which will again be contrary to the PFMA. So as a part of the budget management, what you do, even if we have underspent and we know work has been done, the invoices are still in the system. Like what happened the year that has just been audited, we had invoices of about $262 million in the system, which was still being validated before they could be paid on the 31st. Then in that case, we then approached National Treasury to say, look here, we were allocated this amount, we didn't disperse it as required, but we have this invoice we need to pay, but therefore we will require a rollover for us to be able to pay these particular invoices. If you compare the outcome of that, like the year that you'll get in the annual report, we were allocated in terms of adjusted budget $7 billion. Out of that, we spent $6.5 billion, which means there was an expenditure of $505 in that particular financial year. And as I've alluded to, the bulk of that particular money sits under water resource management and it's specifically infrastructure development work. Now, although we are talking about an expenditure of 505, you will find this note in the annual report that after it has been approved, you will find it there. The unspent 505 is mainly due to the Dihoub Dam. What happened is that the unpaid invoices of $227 million, which were there, meaning the services were rendered during March, but we don't pay immediately. We require to validate those particular invoices before they are paid. So by the time they were presented, the money had already gone back. Secondly, a portion of that 505 is for the social component of the Dihoub Dam. This is the water services component of the Orphans River Resource Project, which cannot go ahead unless the 23 mining houses there agree on certain things that they need to, and they sign the MOU. So what we did in August last year, last calendar year, we requested National Treasury to allow us to use $265 million on the water services related projects on Nandoni and Inyaka Dam. But that particular approval did not come on time for us to disperse the $265. But that particular money had already been spent under the water trading entity just waiting for the approval by National Treasury. So on paper, yes, there is an expenditure of 505. But are we able to explain it? The answer is yes, we can explain it. The 265 of that 505 was spent on the water services projects pending the approval of National Treasury. There were unpaid invoices on accrual basis of 227, which came in after the closure of the financial year, and the 505 had to be surrendered by then. So the rollover has therefore been applied. Let's go to the next slide. Next slide. In overall, as a department, obviously, you'll find we are dealing with the multi-sector. You'll find that on average, we are kind of 95% expenditure trend. And the other thing is that we have also been relying on donor money. I will speak to donor money later on. That particular donor component, whatever is being supported by donor funding, we have already been allocated in 2010, 2011, an allocation from the Exchequer to replace those particular activities. There is funding of new programs, new projects, especially when we have changes like the ones we are going through. You find that there is a need for us to look for new funding. Like when bucket eradication was introduced within the department, we had to embrace it and we had to look for new funding. And each time such activity comes in and it's assigned to us, we give that particular challenge of trying to reprocess our own budget. We then have these multi-sector programs that we enter into. Most of the programs we contribute to, you find they are multi-departmental. It's not just DWARF alone. If you take the case of schools and clinics, it was not just DWARF alone. It was DWARF and other departments that were involved, like the Department of Education. So there is a risk that's inherent in that type of arrangement, and which, of course, we address through the steering committee meetings and through other coordination mechanisms. Of course, inflation, by the way, currently the indicative NTF adjustment we have been given, which we have been told to stick to, and I'll speak to them, I'll show them to you in a few minutes' time. The adjustment to NTF allocation has assumed an inflation factor of 5%. But that's not the inflation rate that applies to our environment, especially the construction environment. The inflation rate is totally different from the one we are assuming when we are compiling the MTF baseline information. For the year we are in, which is the current financial year, 2009 and 10, this is what we have. We have a total of 7.8 billion before any adjustments go through. If there will be any, we'll definitely get to know them in October. And out of that budget, we have a portion that is specifically earmarked. We cannot play around or shift it to another purpose. That portion is 3 billion out of the 7.8 billion. Out of that money, obviously, we have a budget for compensation of employees of 1.3 of the 7.8. The goods and services, which include, the stationery we use and other earmarked allocations, is 2 billion. And by the way, out of that 2 billion, there is a sizable portion that goes to the earmarked projects. Then we have transfer. Transfers here, in this case here, refers to the amount that is channeled through us for the benefit of another sphere of government, like operating subsidy to the transfer of schemes to municipalities, and the money that we deal with the regional bulk. Under regional bulk, it will fit under the transfers and subsidies. On the earmarked funds, I think I owe you an explanation, exactly a breakdown for the year under review, because you're playing your oversight role in this year. The amount we get, the scale amount earmarked for the rent for the building, and the buildings we're talking about nationwide, is the premises we're occupying. And recall that the entire staff, I think when we ended the last financial year, we had a staff complement of 12,800 employees when we ended the financial year last time. So the offices we occupy and all that, we are allocated 138 million in the current year for the buildings. We have working for water, which has been allocated for 55, working on fire. Then the refurbishment of schemes, they start 1 million. And there is the DHUB phase 2B and 2G, which is 600 million. Additional capacity for finance. This amount was available to us during our MTEC discussion of 2008. And it has gone through in order to address capacity issues for the internal audit in the department and financial management. Which means, therefore, if I do not hire the staff that I'm required to hire, no another person will use this particular money in the department. It's only finance that will use that money. Regional bulk, obviously, that's a transfer payment to another sphere of government for regional bulk distribution, and then the operating subsidy for water services project. Which is a DORA allocation. The last two, by the way, the last three, they are DORA allocation. The last three on that particular list, they are DORA allocations. The sanitation and schools and clinic, by the way, this is their last year unless a decision is taken to extend the life of that particular program. But this is their last year allocation, and if they will not have achieved their mandate, their targets, then perhaps there may be a new reallocation, but I'm not yet aware of that. Maybe I will hear about it when we conclude the 2010 MTEC discussions with the National Treasury. Now, when we did the 2009 MTEC discussions, in the way we are doing now the 2010 with the National Treasury at this time of the year, we provided National Treasury with the bids. So any figures that I'll talk about, the 2010 MTEC adjustments, these figures here are already included in the amounts that we have. So in 2009 and 10, we were never allocated any additional funds when we did our discussions on the 2009. So the amounts we allocated ended up being for 2010-11, 2011-2012. For building capacity of the state, which is mainly the learning academy we have within the department, growing the forestry sector, this is the money that forestry will go with to agriculture, for the BE and other things that go with the BE, broad-based empowerment. Then we have jobs for growth, which is working on fire. And then we had jobs for growth, working for water, where we deal with invasive species using intensive labor. and then the regional bulk infrastructure program, which has this particular allocation, and which mainly is a transfer payment in substance. It's not our money. The 2010, I mean the 2009 and 10, you are going to, of course, you're exercising oversight over that particular budget, and you need to know who is having what in that budget. I think that's what I said. I would say for now, ignore the last column because it's the same as the other column. The main appropriation and the adjusted appropriation are the same, but I put it there because after the appropriation statement, I will need to show you how the appropriation was done later on in the year. But for now, they are still the same. Now, within the office of the DG, we have those particular chief directors or those particular components. The chief director internal audit does not report finance, the CFO, he reports to the DG. The function, of course, apart from doing internal audit, they do other things, including the coordination of the audit committee for the department. Now, included in the 145, there are money that was meant for the master systems plan in terms of reengineering our system that we use in the department, or 50 million in that 145. In that particular figure. The rest of the other money is divided among goods and services, but that go with those particular directories that you have under the office of the DG. Corporate services, being a key component also within the function, they have been allocated 500,000, including there, of course, to the salaries and goods and services for that support their work, including communication and etc. Now, you'll notice that director administration has the largest budget, and it's because of the 138 million that is used for premises property management. It will be allocated, and that's the manager that will oversee the disbursement of the money for the rented premises. Finance, this is the money we have. We have the chief directorates, which have a budget of 99 million, and then the office of the CFO, 22 million. And of course, as I've alluded to, included in all that budget, there is also the goods under goods, apart from salaries, which is a sizable portion, we have the auditor general's fees. They charge us fees, and they've kept on adjusting them with inflation with the time, over time. Policy and regulation, if you recall very well, Dr. Sizwe made a presentation to you. He mentioned these directorates, and it's important to know, do they have a budget for them to function? This is the budget they have for the year under review. In terms of institutional oversight, where we establish our CMS and oversee the water boards, we have resource-directed measures and the policy and strategy coordination functions, including our involvement with international relations, where we have that particular budget. Now, the National Water Resource Infrastructure, the role of this budget, Chair, with your permission, I would like to explain. It's something that you will not get on this. I've already alluded to water trading entity and the issue of construction and all that. This allocation is from the Exchequer. The money you see on this slide is from the Exchequer. But how does it get spent? The actual spending and disbursement and payment of suppliers of construction takes place on water trading entity. We don't receive and charge an invoice on bars from the suppliers on construction, for example. Now, what will then happen after they have done their work? We will then get an invoice, because that's what SARS requires us to do, the South Africa, the VAT legislation. We will get a tax invoice from the water trading entity for us to transfer this 1.9 or the 2.1, no, the 1.9, I'm speaking about the 1.9, transfer that money to the water trading entity. It must be against an invoice. For that reason, therefore, you may find that work has already been done on the water trading entity on construction, but the actual payment from the main account to augment it has not gone through because of that particular process. And the 227 million invoice that I referred to earlier, we are as a result of that, as a result of that particular arrangement. We cannot just pay money there without a tax invoice being raised. And the tax invoice will be raised only after the work has been done and certified by the various project managers on the individual class in the individual clusters. Now, COBWA, Komati Basin Water Authority. I'm not sure whether, Chair, you want me to explain more on this, because you have also, I know you have alluded to TCTA during your questions earlier on, but I've not had any one of you make reference to this important institution, because we are paying them 180 million, and we owe you an explanation, what does 180 million pay? Sometimes back, before I even knew that I would apply for a job in Water Affairs, there was a treaty between the Swazi government and the South African government to build Dry Kopis Dam. Some of you have gone in that part of the world, and Maguga Dam in right inside Swaziland. We are responsible, loan was raised. We are responsible for 100% of the loan that was used to build Three Kopis Dam. The farmers in South Africa are registered water users on that particular Three Kopis. On Maguga Dam, we are responsible for 60% of that particular loan that was, and by the way, it was sourced through DBSA. We are responsible for 60% of that particular loan, Development Bank of South Africa. And Development Bank of South Africa, that's where the loan was sourced from. Now, so during the duration of that loan, apart from that, there is also the administration of Cobo itself, of Komati Basin Water Authority. It has a board. We appoint, the South African government appoints through three directors. The Swazi government appoints three directors, in total six. So it's more than 50-50. Now, the administrative costs that go with that are catered for under 180. And in addition, the servicing of the loan that builds Maguga Dam and Dry Kopis, it's covered as part of the 180 million. So that's a permanent feature on our budget as we speak. Now, there is no revenue generated. As a legal entity, COBWA is a legal entity. It has its legal personality. It has a board functioning with the CEO and staff. But I don't know the number of staff. That much I'll need to refer to the report. Now, but the administrative costs, they don't generate another revenue for them to carry out the administrative functions they are in charge of. Now, what happens, therefore, when you read the treaty, and which I would like, if you want the presentation to be taken, we'll call in the chairperson, who is a member of DWAF, to come and make to you a presentation about it, if you want that, on the, exactly what goes on in COBWA. Or if you want to visit it again, we can also, all of us, go and do this, so that you understand what COBWA, because it's a key, when you talk of water security in South Africa, we cannot talk and leave out COBWA as an entity. Given, first of all, the 180 million, we cannot leave it out. Even after we have paid the loan, we cannot. Now, they share the output. They don't share the revenue. It's a joint venture between South Africa and Swazi government. And but when you read the agreement, they share the output from those particular dams. So the water that comes out of those dams then is used, is allocated between South Africa and the and Swazi government. The branch region, which is headed by Tandeka, has water resource management function. That's why we have proto-CMS. So we also allocate a budget to the activity. So you will hear about branch operations, water resource management. WRM is water resource management. Sorry for the abbreviation. That's where we operate through those offices. We have the DG herself, and then the other regions that do work wherever they are. We allocate them a budget to carry out the mandate. Free State obviously comes in. I think it's the same thing. That is water resource management. And then we have something there. The last line, Chair, is the one I would like to speak to, the 107. The 107, this is the recommendation to the proto-CMS. The CMS, as it stands as of now, the revenue generated from the water resource management charge does not cover 100% of all the costs. So there is a subsidization, or if you want to call it, recommendation, to the water trading entity in the form of, like this year we have budgeted for 107 million to cover the deficits that are associated with the operations of the catchment areas. Then we have water services. Under operations regions, under the branch operations, we have water services, and that's where we then deal with issues like these transfers. The transfers I've been alluding to, they are allocated their budget. They occur at the region. They don't occur from the head office. They take place from the relevant region. You will pick up that Limpopo somewhere and Mpumalanga have a bigger budget, and even KwaZulu-Natal, than another region, and it's because of those particular water surface operations they need to oversee. This is the same thing in terms of sanitation and other things that go with water services programs, but being executed within the regional offices. Going forward for the 2009 MTF, generally, before we do any adjustments that we are going to do after we engage with the National Treasury, this is the figure we have, the MTF estimates. Now, build the 8.2 and the 9.4 is the 5% I needed to as an inflation adjustment that National Treasury asks us to factor in. Now, for example, you'll notice that there is some changes anyway on those particular budgets, and the details of that is what we'll then share with you once we have concluded the discussion, and normally it will be after November. After another further adjustment, we'll do them in November. That's when we'll be ready to share the finer details of the 2010-11 and the 2011-12. If you go by program structure, because of the changes that have taken place, by the way, we don't have water services. We have water regulations. We don't have water services, that last one. We have gone through, in your pack, you will find a document that talks about the budget structure. There should be a document in your pack. You should have found it, which explains what are the sub-programs or the new programs, given the changes that have taken in government. We have tried also to reorganize ourselves internally to address such as that, like, for example, under administration. Remember, the department never used to have the position of a deputy minister. We now have the position of a deputy minister, so we have factored it in as a sub-program. If you go to water management, we have a sub-program on integrated water planning, policy and strategy, water ecosystem, and water information management. That will then infrastructure is the way I've explained it, the development of infrastructure. Regional management, we have regional bulk there and other special projects. Then we don't have water services as a program, we have water regulation in order to emphasize the idea of policy and regulation and the enforcement of those particular regulations. So the last row there, we are not going to talk about water services. The budget allocated there is for water regulation, to regulate water use and enforcement of compliance in that sector. That brings me to the end of the main account issues, voted funds. But then when you look at the donor funding, which we receive, we have been allocated over the MTF basis, we have certain funds that we are likely to get in over this particular period for those particular projects that you have seen there. We have signed an agreement with mainly the EU. The EU are the key contributors to this, who are then keen to support us in those particular areas that we have already highlighted on this document. We report about donor funds within our annual report, and we included the E&E document from last financial year. We included, and it's audited by AG. Also, the same funds are audited by AG. Now, the water trading entity, in summary, you will notice that we get money from the bulk water. I think that's the message I wanted to portray with this one, unless you have other specific questions. We get money from the water users who use our water resource infrastructure, and then there is other revenue. It could be from sale of assets. It could be from either interest we have earned, and et cetera. Besides that, we have exchequer funds that come in, but this is not, this is for the whole department. The one you have is for the whole department. It's not just for WT alone. It's for the whole department. The exchequer funds, I've already spoken about them. So when you look at a department as a whole, you will realize that we have money from the bulk of sales, which comes in, and then we have the exchequer funds, which are voted by Parliament, and then the donor funds, as I've alluded to. That will be then the summary in terms of going forward, what the department as a whole will be looking at in the next 3 years before adjustments are effected. For the water trading entity alone, the figures you will have will be income from the raw water sales and other sundry income. Next slide. Then, of course, that income is spent on the compensation of employees and then other projects in goods and services, which will be include capital assets for operations and maintenance at the water scheme level, at the scheme level, as the case may be. There should be also be a budget for the refurbishment under the water trading entity. We budget for any money we collect. We ensure that we do the refurbishment of the scheme, so we provide for that within our budget. Now, besides that, of course, there will be, obviously, augmentation. The last line on this particular slide here, the last line you have, the 1.7, is the money we expect to transfer from the main account to the water trading entity. So we need to trace the movement of those particular funds from the main exchequer to the water trading entity. Now, normally that particular recommendation will go to the infrastructure development projects, not for recurrent expenditure. I think we can go to jump that one. No, I think before we jump that one, let's just go back. You will notice this last slide, I'm referring to CMA, proto-CMS. From the budget there, you will notice that there is funds recommendation from the main account is because of the projected deficit of 94 million. So this shows you clearly that the CMS did not necessarily, the current revenue base does not enable them to recover the whole cost associated with them. So the recommendation must come in from the exchequer side of things to recommend the WTE, the water trading entity. I thank you.
Thank you very much. That was the presentation on the finances strategy. I will open for questions on this one, and then the last two that we can take, we can then tie them together and ask questions. But I think with the finances, we'll have to do it now, whilst I see everybody's agreeing with me. I will then be guided by yourself. I'm sure that you have many questions that you have observed while the presenter was doing his thing, and I have also my own concerns and questions about such a beautiful presentation, but the outcome from the Auditor General doesn't agree with what we are being told. Luckily, I attended a workshop on Friday with the Auditor General, and I'm happy that they are here today because I wanted to prepare myself for today. Identify Honorable Morgan, Honorable Luyenge, Mama Ndude now, and Honorable Ndude. Let's take those three hands for now. Honorable Morgan.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, sir, very much for that presentation. Very comprehensive. Certainly very formative. I learned a lot about the finer details about how this department operates, so thank you for that. I'm interested with the points you made about under the WTE challenges when you noted that it had been raised in the DORA about the possibility that you shouldn't be both the regulator and the planner, among other things. With that kind of, you know, that kind of thought now, and having had other entities comment on it, is it a discussion that has a forum in the department? And what, in fact, would have to happen in order for those functions to be split into different entities? Could it be done internally, or would it require an amendment to a piece of legislation in order to separate those functions? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Yeah, I think, Chair, the presentation is very clear, and there is no struggle in terms of engaging it. On the issue with regard to supply chain management, I would like to check, Chair, is there any vetting that is being done by the department in terms of their service providers? And also the updating of the asset register. What are the periods, the periodical updating of such register? Is it after 3 years or 5 years that they update that register and also evaluate the assets that are valuable? Then what are there any functions that have been actually taken down to regions? Decentralization of certain financial powers that are given to regions so as to to fast track the service delivery. I want to get there is this issue of capacity. We are now 15 years into our democracy, and when we said we must be voted in, we never said when we get there we will look for a shop that is going to sell capacity. We said this is what we are going to do. And none of us, we were not in exile when we were taking over. And we started all this, you know, telling people that we are going to deliver as this department. At no stage that we can allow a perpetual scapegoat of incapacity, lack of capacity in departments. It's a cut crossing, you know, term that is being used. And many officials will think that because this thing is understood by parliamentarians, because there is no capacity, then it is a justification of underperformance and the continued underdevelopment amongst our people. I mean, it's something that we cannot see. That if incapacity is more, Honorable Ndude, on the areas where we said the previously disadvantaged communities exist. When you say in the Eastern Cape, it's likely that you can have people that will be trainable on these issues. When you're talking finance, you're talking everything. All what you are saying is around finances. If we don't have capacity in financial management, you must just forget. No, it's a worrying factor, as Ucha Person has said. No. Because the presentation is explicit, but when you look at the outcome, because the OBE is assisting, you know, at the end of it, we want to see tangible outcomes, you know. Then lastly, Chair, there's this exchequer fund. You know, at finance, we were saying the new act that governs the finances of the country as a result of the changing of the old laws, and the Exchequer Act is one of them. But in this department, you find that the Exchequer is I don't know whether it is regarded as a saving element within the department. You cannot justify the under expenditure, even if it is of a cent. Because if you say this funding now we are earmarking, you cannot earmark under expenditure for further developmental aspect. You just can't do that. I mean, there are funds that are called, there is this account called the suspense account in government. I don't know whether you regard this as a suspense account, because its suspense account is coming as a result of monies that could not be used in that financial year for justified reasons. So if someone has passed away, then that salary, if there is no employment that has been done, it goes to the, what's name, to that fund, or unclaimed monies. So when you have a separate or a direct direct focus on the exchequer to say that we have got this fund, you've got, and you want, one day you will have a minister of exchequer funds in this country, because it generates more year by year, and you can see that UCFO, you know, is quite adamant that we are going to do 1, 2, 3, 4 once you get more exchequer, and you must not spend all of your budget, because at the end of the day you won't have contributed into the exchequer. Hey, I'm very much afraid of the exchequer. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much to the presenter. I must say this was very refreshing, I must say, very much. So from the previous reports that we've seen from this department, especially on the financials, it's really refreshing to see that there are people who are capable, to do their work. It really, as I was sitting here, I was as if I'm sitting in a board of Transnet, listening to the CFO really giving a financial report. So really for me, not sitting in Parliament, listening to a department giving a financial report, because those two are totally different. People, when they are in government, they think that they are not supposed to be performing. They only do well when they are in private sector, not in the public sector. So for me, really, this was very impressive. Let me also, comment where is you, Chairperson, on the development in terms of the finance management policies. I think, again, you can see that there are new people there that actually know what they are supposed to be doing. And I'm also very impressed by the creation and the update on the asset register, because if you recall, on the budget vote of this very department, I raised this issue very sharply, because I was very concerned that the department is able to claim to say it have got this asset value, and yet there is no asset register to be able to sort of talk to that. So that is very refreshing and also very commendable. Also, on the issue of the verification and valuation of the biological assets, so I can see that there is really some improvement, in these areas. I think I also I'm attempted to also, agree with Honourable Member Luyenge on the issue of capacity, and skills shortage. This is really a problem. It must not be a song of every year and every month. I think at some point you just need to say enough is enough on this issue. We close your ears to say we can't listen to this again after 15 years, that you still have the same song, because really, that's why you find that most of the time politicians are taken by communities as liars, that people not to be trusted. Because a politician will stand and promise something, but the bureaucracy, that is your officials, are the ones who are actually now supposed to be implementing. And if you've got a problem, I'm just listening to this. This stuff for me is a liability. It's really a liability if you are saying that it's people that you cannot train. What are they kept there for? How were they employed in the first place? Some of our policies, Chairperson, has to be very clear to say if a person does not have, skills, how and the capacity, how that was that person employed in the first place? That's a question. And I think some investigation that can actually go back and try to investigate to how these people were employed and actually deal with the culprit that have maybe employed people on favoritism basis if people can't be trainable, because I hear that these people who can't even train them. So you just get rid of the people because they are costing you money and they are a liability. Simple as that. On the issue of challenges, I see, and I'm again here, I must say that one again need to comment, because I can see the challenges that were there in the department, before one came in and what, is being done. But there are, challenges that are still, there. I think for one of the problems that I have, and that's the biggest concern that I have, is the escalating risk, of the service failure and the growing backlog, for me. I think, for me, Chairperson, we have seen what has happened in ESCOM, and I think ESCOM is supposed to serve as a lesson to all the government departments. One of the biggest problems is that you must never allow your infrastructure, to deteriorate, because the cost of actually, redoing, that is actually very, very high. So the maintenance of the infrastructure is always very, very important, because for me, ESCOM is a case in point that was supposed to be an eye-opener, and that all of us, we say, we cannot repeat what has happened in ESCOM, that all of a sudden South Africa just had a blackout, because 10 years ago, of course, 10 years ago or 15 years ago, we failed, to deal with the issue. of the maintenance. And now, you know, I'm looking at a maintenance that is already escalating from 10 billion. I'm worried, Chairperson, are we going to wait until it becomes 20 billion? And from there, you wait until it becomes 30 billion. Will we be able to have, you know, that kind of money? So I would love to know, what is the department doing about this? Is there any plan? Is there any budgeting that is being done, you know, to make sure that we don't find ourselves wanting, because we are talking about a crucial commodity, you know, here. Imagine if we can allow this infrastructure to collapse. It is not like electricity, this one. It is far important than electricity is, because you can still survive without electricity, but I'm not sure if you can survive without this, you know, commodity. So, you know, for me, that's very, you know, important. And I think that the last, you know, point for me, Chair, is a cause for concern. It's on the Komati, you know, basin. I think really there's some, you know, it can be good if we can have maybe those three board members and the chairperson who can actually come and maybe make some presentation so that we can really understand of what is happening there. I was very worried when I listened to the presentation to say that, you know, it's supposed to be a joint venture, and yet we are actually paying for almost you know everything. And the other beneficiary on the other side is actually just doing nothing, is just receiving, and we just have to carry the cost. I think we need to hear from those, and then from there we can, maybe there's something that this portfolio can actually take it up with the minister and seek some clarity and see what recourse, you know, can be done on the matter. Thank you very much.
Ms. Lavo.
Thank you, Chair. I have, and I also want to add my thanks for an excellent presentation. I have three questions. The first is about the subsidies that the department appears to be funding. The one to the agricultural sector that you mentioned, and the other to the catchment management agencies. It was said, Chair, during the presentation that because of the price capping, particularly to the agricultural sector, we are required to invest more in our infrastructure than what we currently can receive or are receiving from our operations. Now, that's obviously a problem. I'm by no means suggesting that drastic action must be taken. We know the agricultural sector is important, but this is not sustainable. So what is being done? I'm interested to know what is being done, what options are being looked at so that we can afford to maintain our infrastructure. The other subsidy is to the catchment management agencies. To the best of my knowledge, we have two, Chair, at the moment, but we're hoping to expand that. Now, they're not bringing in the revenue. They're not bringing in revenue. We're having to augment their operations substantially. 107 million you have down, I think, for this year. And the money that we're spending versus what they're actually achieving, is it worth it? Is this something that is constantly under review? It might fall outside of the ambit of pure financial management. I do understand that. I want to link to the issue of capacity development. I certainly hear what is being said, and that it might be a cop-out to constantly say we have a lack of capacity, but we certainly do when it comes to, for instance, engineering skills. We certainly do. Now, there's 25 million in the budget for capacity development, which is not, comparatively speaking, if we are spending 107 million, for instance, to augment the operations of what we are told are non-functioning catchment management agencies, versus 25 million to develop capacity to run this department, that doesn't seem to make sense. Because in the long run, it's the capacity development that obviously will make everything sustainable. And I would just like your comment on that. And then lastly, Chair, I'm just interested in the donor funding. There's substantial donor funding, 164 million this year, and for some reason, substantially increased next year, 482 million. My interest here is whether this is linked primarily to water or primarily to sanitation services, because we were told last week that sanitation services will be moving across to housing. Could this mean the move of sanitation, I mean, not housing, human settlements, the move of sanitation to human settlements, could this mean the loss in any of this donor funding, and is that important to us and our financial planning? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, members. Before I give to the department to respond, I must also say that Mr. Ayaya had a very good presentation. I'm sure we all feel the same, that this was one of the best presentations, especially when it comes to finances. I think we're very transparent. about what Honorable Duda says about inviting Komati and these other entities, I think that we should also maybe think of inviting even the regions to come to Parliament, so that we should hear from them what are their challenges. And one thing that I'm interested in is just to find out how long has been the chief financial officer with DWAF. How long have you been with DWAF? Because if you were with DWAF for the past 5 years, and then we've been getting disclaimers report and qualified report with all this knowledge, one just wonders whether is everything fine within the department, unless you tell me that you started this year or last year, because I understand that we'll be getting something better than what we've been getting all these years. And one thing that, again, that I would like to ask from yourself, there is a structure that you said that exists within the DG's office. Is it a new structure that has been established, or is it a new structure that has been there? Because if it's a structure that has been there with such powerful chief directorate, with what we've been getting for the past years, then there is something which is not right there. And one thing that I want you to tell us is understanding a good thing. Is understanding a good thing. If it's not, why is it identified as one of the challenges if it's not? Secondly, maybe we should also know why, what was the reason for the National Treasury not to approve the 200 and something million that you requested from them, because I agree with Uta Tuliyenge about most of the issues that he mentioned about these projects that you felt that you need the same amount for those. That means you did not budget for those projects. And then the last thing is the thing that has been mentioned by Uma Mundude. When I spoke to Auditor General last week about the issue of the skills, shortage of the skills, one of the reasons why departments are getting this qualified and disclaimers, it starts with the appointment of these people. Because you get a social worker being a CFO, a social worker being a CFO. So you see such things. It's a misplacement of a skill, you know, yeah. So as a result, then you get what we are getting from departments. Because we discovered that about 60% of the departments, not more, for the past years has been getting qualified and disclaimer reports from the Auditor General. I agree with you, Ms. Morgan, the CMA. I think Dr. Mkhize last week put it very clear that it's a useless structure. So you ask yourself then, why do you have to use such a lot of funds on keeping a useless structure? And I'm also afraid that we said that we've got only two and then we intend to get more. If we can't manage these two that we already have, you can imagine then what's going to happen with the rest that we are intending to put in place. Otherwise, I really feel very grateful for most of the things that you have raised here that some of us are not aware of, that are happening within the department when it comes to the finances. And because of time, I think I'll give to you then to respond on those issues, so that we should take the next presentation. And I'm also curious to know that what is the Auditor General's opinion on the issue of understanding? What did he say? Is it a good thing to understand? I'm worried about understanding, because you must remember that I come from the police. Understanding is a problem. I don't know, maybe with you it's a good thing, but you must understand where I come from. So if we can get that a response from yourself. Thanks, Acting DG. To respond.
Okay. I'll start with what Honorable Morgan referred to, the amendment to the legislation. I mean, the issue around the challenges being a regulator and all that. That will require an amendment to the legislation, but it's a process, and the way I understand it, it must be initiated by the department as part of the reconfiguration of the sector. It cannot be done in isolation of, let's say, the discussion you have had about the number of institutions that should be reported to the minister, how many water user associations, how many CMS and all that. So it's seen as part of that, the entire chain. But what I was highlighting on that message, on that particular slide, was that there is a concern. We said we own the infrastructure. Sasol abstracts water from our infrastructure. We cannot be the same ones again, be setting the price and regulating. There must be somebody saying, "No, Dwarf, you are wrong. You can't charge, let's say, 15, you can't increase your water user charge by 15%. So there are those particular concerns. But those concerns, obviously, are being taken through as part of what we call institutional realignment. And it will obviously lead to a change in some of the legislation. It cannot just go without the legislation change. I think that's what I can say regarding that. Now, supply chain vetting of PSPs. And by the way, maybe let me use the opportunity to answer the chair that I've been assumed duty in water affairs on the 2nd of July, 2007. So I'm 2 years and 2 months old. By the end of this month, I'll have finished two years and 2 months. Now, we have not been able to, it's something that we wanted to do a vetting, but the exercise, we tried to cost it to find out what will be the value add, given even the risk that we need to mitigate against it. And we found that one will be asking for not less than, some substantial sums of money. So we needed to reorganize ourselves. Like the information we get on the tender, where somebody tells us, okay, he has this number of women in the company, and they claim the B status. We need to be able to go behind and be able to validate this. The capacity issue, which you have rightly spoken to, and your comments are taken positively, is one of the things we needed to reorganize ourselves internally and have somebody that will select from a list of suppliers and do an investigation behind. So what we have only so far been doing is to use where we suspect there's something wrong. We will call on the internal auditor to go and do some due diligence for us. But in general, there was no formalized vetting of the suppliers. I would be lying to you if I tell you that we have ever done. But where we suspect something is wrong, we will then call in the internal auditor to go and do an investigation for us. That's how we have handled the vetting. But going forward, obviously, with some internal capacity and with the help of even the registry we have in CIPRO, in the Registration of Companies Directorate, one would be able to verify some of this information we get on the tender documents we get from time to time. Now, updating of the asset registers, our accounting policy is what we'll comply with. And for water trading entity, they comply with the International Financial Reporting Standards. One of them, it requires us to do what you call impairment testing at the end of every financial year and do the adjustment financially. So that is on the side of bulk infrastructure, which is fixed. Now, if you count the movable asset, the updating, of course, as you acquire more, you dispose, we are required. And we have a dedicated team. And by the way, in water trading, I have of the 13 directors and chief directors that I've employed, that have been hired in the last 2 years, one of them is dedicated just to look at accounting issues on assets and nothing else. So that will be part of his role, or is part of his role, to ensure that the asset is updated before we prepare financial statements. Even, by the way, we are, for the first time, we prepared, and I'm not aware of another national department that attempted to prepare interim financial statement last financial year. We prepared interim financial statements because we wanted to understand where we were in terms of what we had set ourselves to get to. Because we had set ourselves that by the year ending 31st March 2009, we should have a qualified audit. Now, so we needed to monitor our progress, and we ended up preparing an interim financial statement at the end of September 2008. The same thing for water trading, we are going to do the same at the end of September again this year, 2009, in order to find out what the issues raised by the auditors, even if they did not filter through the audit report, in the audit opinion, did we address them or what? So those are some of the refinements that we are going to do, and obviously the updating of the asset register, therefore, if we are preparing the interim financial statement after 6 months, it will have to be updated and hand it over to the AG to form part of their audit when they do what they call interim audit. A number of these functions are decentralized. Financial management, like if you come on procurement, which is part of the financial management, they are allowed to do their procurement up to 1 million from the region. Anything above 1 million, it comes to, they sit there, they do the evaluation of the tender, and they bring it over to the head office for adjudication. The rest of the other, how they spend their money and all that, once we have allocated the budget the way we have, it's up to them to spend their money. And where they have overspent, of course, we call them to account, where they have overspent. And indeed, there were pockets of such overexpenditure in some of the regions last time. I mean, the year that has just passed. But then we had to understand what drove the cost in the way they were driven. Now, capacity, which, of course, we don't want to hide behind capacity, and I will support your view. I'm sure also the acting DG will support that. The 25 million we have talked about, it was out of that concern. We must be seen, and we not just be seen, we must be doing something. That's why we prepared a funding proposal to National Treasury to say we need some money to build capacity, especially in the technical field. So the 25 million I've alluded to in one of the slides, which was allocated to us during our discussion of 2009 MTF, was meant for the Learning Academy. We have a Learning Academy where we take on young graduates, we see them through until they graduate. How many are they, Nobu? Maybe you may want to give.
172.
Now, that's part of the money we are earmarking for those. We give them bursaries and all that. We are talking of technical fees. Now, in finance case, obviously, I'm one person, of course, who said I will not accept that position, that we don't have enough capacity. And for information, I have some background from university teaching. Some of the CS you have in this country went through it when I was there as an associate professor. Now, in water trading entity, given the challenges we have of capacity as we speak, we have 27 interns on the ground. That's how serious we are. We are paying them $5,000 a month. That one even saves us a lot of money, because if we had hired a PSP or a professional service provider to do the same job for us, they would have charged us not less than $350 per hour. That was our argument. So we have hired them. And some of the PSPs, for example, the ones we are trying to get rid of, for example, because we have no, and they realize there's a recession outside there, some of them have come and they have just asked, why don't we then come in as assistant directors, which is far much less than what they have been earning, to say, to come in just on 1 year contract, and we have said, no, we will engage in with you on this particular matter. So we don't want, I agree with you, and we take it seriously, that we are not going to hide behind the issue of capacity. There is something we are going to do, and indeed we are doing about it. After these 27, of course, I would like, you may want to know, what next? The what next is that the position that are being created through our structures, these interns would then be appointed, and we take on the new interns who would then be developed. Even if we do not offer them jobs, they can be employed this way. National Treasury has done that before, and they have what they call a cadet program. So we are able to do that, like in the financial management part, we are able to do that particular side of things. The underperformance in the area we are alluded to, over where we have about 12 to 13 employees, these were originally foresters in one of the homeless, but they used to work in a store. Supply chain falls is part of the work of the supply chain is storekeeping. So somebody somewhere, when the homeless are being incorporated into the department, they were taken on as storekeepers, and therefore they have been with us. But as I alluded to you, I didn't want to go into the details. The DG, the acting DG, who is also the DG for corporate services, with the manager on the ground, there is some way to see them out of the system. It's not something that we have folded our hands and said we are doing nothing about it. We have thrown them off. We are acting on it. Because these are people, I'm not sure, as I've told you, I may be the one who was in a hurry to work towards a clean audit, therefore I did not pay attention to their training. But my sense of them that I will invest more in training them than taking a new graduate who would then be able to do the job in the next 1 or 2 years. Previously, by the way, there was no finance structure for the regions. The head of corporate services in the region was the same head of finance in the region. And that's why you had the disclaimer you had in 2006 and 2007. This is something we have therefore separated. I've talked about linking of function. We had separated now and said, no, if you're head of corporate services, please remain as corporate services. The head of finance must be a finance person who will look. Those structures were then approved by the DG on the 16th of November. Oh, no, 16th of June last year, and the recruitment went through. We have done as well. There are just a few areas where the posts have not been filled yet, but we are in the process of filling. So you will not employ somebody unless there's a structure. That's another thing, by the way, about the public service. So the structure, my first year in Dwarf, what I had to work on was the structure I wanted to work with. And, of course, I've not even finished because the operational clusters where construction is has not ended yet. There's still some more work that need to be done there. But for the 9 regions, that one has already been done. It's a question of filling the positions. The issue around the escalation of the cost or the backlog I've alluded to earlier on, it requires in our limited knowledge, we require two approaches. Either the National Treasury or government in general accepts that we are effectively subsidizing agriculture. And for us to subsidize, we'll need to be given additional recommendation to maintain the existing infrastructure in a workable condition before it collapses. I'm not saying that it has collapsed, before it collapses. Now, this type of conversation will not have taken place unless certain thorough analysis had been done. Now, this analysis has been done as part of the asset verification, knowing where the assets are and who is using them. After we knew who is using which asset or which scheme and all that, we were then able to translate this into our revenue. What does it translate into our revenue? It's that's the time we realize that there is a problem with the current pricing strategy. So if we don't get recommendation from National Treasury or from the fiscals in this case, the other way is to change the pricing strategy, which must be, by the way, we must consult with all the stakeholders in order to change it and allow, remove any form of capping. But in its present form, you will not be able to move with the pricing strategy. So is there something being done about the pricing strategy? The answer is yes. We are already reviewing the pricing strategy. After we came to know about the value of the assets we have, and the need to maintain those assets in a workable condition, it became necessary that we review the pricing strategy to allow us to achieve the two goals that I alluded to. One, to raise money to maintain the existing infrastructure or build a new one, and two, to instill appropriate behavior, consumption behavior in the water users. Those are the two objectives at the back of my mind I would like to have in the captured when the final pricing strategy is approved, which obviously will, again, have to come back to you for buy-in and for you to make your contribution. But we'll start the work from where we are at present. Komati, I think you can go. I think it's your prerogative. It's not my prerogative. I will emphasize, I need to just highlight that fact that in the interaction I've had with the committee from the time you were constituted, you have comfortably made the reference to CTA. You have comfortably made the reference to other institutions within the country. But through and throughout, including the last time we met Chair, nobody ever made reference to COBWA. But COBWA, I wanted just to let you know that is a key resource in the water security objective, and it will be wrong for you or for us to hide it from you, given firstly the amount and the original intention of having COBWA established, and given that water does not know the boundaries. So we need, obviously, to understand. Reviewing then, the treaty was signed, yes. Those who had that intention, it was a good intention. There is no harm in stepping back and saying, can we review the model that was originally conceptualized? So it's a matter, obviously, which, we will engage with this separately. I will not go into the finer details. I'm sure the chairperson, currently the chairperson, who is a member of the department, plus the other three members, or you can summon the entire board, they should be able, and the relevant chief director in this case will be the chief director from Mpumalanga, not everybody in that case. It will only be the chief director in Mpumalanga who will be relevant on the matter. I'm not sure whether the new structure I've alluded to. Maybe let's go to that slide, Babalwa, so that we speak to it. There was a structure of the Office of the DG, the one which was the budget for the Office of the DG. Yeah, the structure we have here, apart from the Chief Operating Officer and Director Corporate Planning, CD, and Director Transformation, the rest of the other posts that are below that are proposed, are new. But we needed to allocate certain funds that when the Minister and the Minister of Public Service, once they approve, then we should be able to move on that. But from the look of things, on the adjusted budget estimate, the amount shown below there, I'm inclined to advise the accounting officer to reallocate that budget. Because we are going into 6 months. It takes us not less than 2 months to fill the positions. So even if it was approved today, we won't be able, those managers, when they are hired, they won't be able to spend $3 million in less than 6 months. So we would rather that the amount as part of our media review, we internally, what thing we are likely to revisit is to ensure that we reallocate that particular money, especially to the regions, to for them to do what they're supposed to do in their region, in their budgets. So it's a proposed structure. The first 3-4 lines are existing. They've been all along been there, at least from the time I joined. But the other ones which have come down there, they are considered maybe that there could be some special programs. So arguments and counter-arguments have come to the fore, and the structure has not been finalized. And since it has not been finalized, it hasn't been approved by the minister, chances are that the budget shown against those three lines, it will have to be reallocated to the regions for them to use it instead of it being at the head office. And the spending, obviously, is not healthy, but the auditor, when they are doing compliance audit, they will focus more on unauthorized expenditure, where we exit our vote. But, and the expenditure, obviously, the way they will speak to it will be to speak to it in the context of, did we achieve what we set ourselves to achieve when they are doing the information audit, performance information audit, and in which case it will be linked to the and expenditure within the department. Now, the amount we have referred to about the and expenditure so far, remember the main account uses a cash basis of accounting. I think I'll need to go back to this one. What is recorded finally in the appropriation statement that you will see in the annual report is what has been paid out. The checks have been written and their money has gone and it's no longer in the bank account. Now, if for one reason or the other, even if a supplier had already delivered goods on 31st, let's say they delivered goods on 31st for the 505 million, if that invoice had not been captured on the system, they will not have access to that money. We will keep the invoice, but what we will do, we will record under expenditure, the theoretical under expenditure, but ask National Treasury to allow us to use it in the next budget period. But where there's no invoice, for example, to prove, like I've tried to show you that the 505, there were some invoices in the system. Where there are no invoices, somebody sat with that money, ideally that one is where you need to come out tough. That one cannot be entertained. Because the managers should have planned far much ahead, and in September, for example, September is media. When you are doing our media review, we should be able to know reasonably well that we will not spend a certain portion of the budget, and in which case ask National Treasury and even Parliament to allow us to adjust, to do the necessary adjustment, to reallocate funds where they are needed instead of us keeping it. So this is now, which goes back to the program managers who are mainly the DDGs who do the program management. But we do that during what you call our media assessment of the expenditure. And we already know, like already I've told you, the last three lines on the Office of the DG, we're not going to spend that money. We won't spend 100% of that money in that area. So we need to allocate it in another area so that the last 6 months that money is utilized for self-delivery. I'm not sure whether I've covered everything, madam, but if you have not, then I will welcome the clarity where I may not have. No, I think there was something about donors. Or there were some questions. About the subsidies to agriculture, I think that's the recommendation we're talking about. Effectively, we are subsidizing, but there's something that we are doing about it, changing the pricing strategy, or asking that the fiscals subsidize us. Put that money in the budget, knowing very well that we need to sustain the sector. The capacity development issue, I think I've alluded to it, the 25 million. The 25 million is for the Learning Academy, and of course you compare to the other documentation that you are talking about, but this 25 million is what we felt that within the target market, this is what we'll be able, comfortably be able to spend without having rollovers again. So we need to have what we can spend on the learners we have taken on. It's not everybody that is taking engineering, so the 150 or 170 learners we have taken on, we feel that this is what will support to keep the program going. The donor funding, we are the lead sector. I mean, we are this agreement, we are the party of the agreement. So the money generally, if it was specifically for a target on sanitation, obviously the principle of the budget follows the function will apply. But if this function remains with what we are doing, like if, for example, it may be on regulation, because the regulation element of sanitation is still with us. So if it relates entirely from the projects we have already approved, then the budget will still remain with the department. It will not go with to human settlement. But as things stand, the agreement is not with the human settlement. The agreement is between the EU and the department and not human settlement. But we can again revisit it and say, out of the decision by His Excellency the President, this function is moving away, and therefore it's moving away. The principle of budget for resources follows the function will then apply, and will amend the necessary clauses in the donor agreement. But where that is not happened, we'll still execute the mandate. It is still part of our mandate and take it forward with the concurrence of the donor.
Thank you very much. I must agree with members that now that you've told me that you started in July 2007, now I understand why a sudden change to the department. Let's hope you keep it that way. But I don't want to lead a dying department or a collapsing department, which is supposed to do what is the most important thing in people's lives, that is giving life, which is water. So I believe that with your presence there as the CFO, then things will change and change forever. Whoever will take sorry, will take from you will have just to follow in your footsteps and do the same. Let us then take then the next presentation. Acting DG, because we have until 1 o'clock to finish this.
But I think maybe, I know you are, Honorable Mundunde had asked a question about the audit. I think I can only say that I don't have a signed copy of the audit report. But what if I go by what the auditors presented the audit committee on the 31st of July, we have made very good progress. They were to do their internal review. I had a meeting with them yesterday before I flew to Cape Town in the evening. I had a meeting with them. They were still doing the internal review of their own working papers before they give you the external review, what they call pre-issue. So that's where they were as of yesterday. But the report they shared with the audit committee on the 31st showed that there were no major issues that will warrant us to get a qualification. That's what they shared. But should the internal review reveal something else, it's beyond me, it's beyond you, that's their prerogative, we'll therefore take it and gladly accept their verdict, I mean the opinion, and move forward. I think that's what I would say on the audit opinion.
Thank you very much. Luckily, we're not focusing on one department. We were dealing with all the department, but you know that as a chair of water affairs, I will always be biased, want to hear about water affairs issues, you know. Yeah. But so far, there is nothing that he raised, which is a serious matter as far as I'm concerned, unless then, as you are saying, that something else come up here. Let us take the next presentation, did you?
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson, and good morning, members. My presentation will be focused on the monitoring and evaluation system within the department. There are four areas that I'll touch on: the background, the current situation, where we want to be, and the conclusion. Looking at the background, currently the department complies with various policies and prescripts of government relating to the management of organizational performance. One of them being the proposed and implementation plan on the development of government-wide monitoring and evaluation system from the presidency. Then there's also the framework for organizational performance assessment issued by the Public Service Commission. And there's also the framework for managing performance information from the National Treasury. So as a department, currently we have a manual system to look at how do we manage our performance. And this is in compliance with the Treasury Regulations Part 3, Section 531, which requires that an accounting officer should establish procedures for quarterly reporting. So we have quarterly reports that are produced and submitted to the minister. Then the current situation, as I indicated, is that we have different sets of monitoring aspects that we look at. One being monitoring achievements against the targets that are in the strategic plan. So the quarterly reports that are produced will normally talk to what was planned and what has been achieved at a particular interval. And this is also linked with the individual performance management system to ensure that you have managers who are responsible for the management of programs and directorates. We ensure that whatever they commit to in terms of their performance agreements is really linked to what the organization has committed in terms of the strategic plan and the business plans. And we also have the in-year monitoring systems. That's what the CFO has alluded to say. On monthly basis, then the CFO will produce reports, expenditure reports, that are presented and discussed at top management relating to what has been spent against the budget. Then you also have at sector level now various reports that will come through. As it has been indicated that there are funds that we normally allocate in terms of DORA, then you will have money that goes to health for the distribution of tanks to the clinics and also the schools and also other institutions like municipalities. You normally get the reports. So the reports are coming in a manual way in the form of quarterly reports that we will receive from Department of Education, Department of Health, Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, South African Local Government Association, Water Information Network in South Africa. So all these statistics that we get is consolidated and form part of those quarterly reports that we produce. And we also produce sector reports that will talk to selected number of indicators that normally you'll find in the estimate of the national expenditure. So the other issue that we are currently doing, it is a challenge normally when you deal with a manual system. So what is happening, the Directorate Corporate Planning normally assists the Office of the DG by receiving reports from different branches. And once we receive the reports, we start going through because you know, you will have a problem at times to rely on a report without verifying at some stage. When we receive the reports from the branches, we look at certain quality assurance issues. For instance, you'll find that the strategic plan has outlined a set of targets to be achieved. So what we do, we look at what a particular branch has reported against those targets, to check whether there's progress or no progress, and also look at what are those issues that may be affecting their performance. If there is non-performance, why is there no progress? And then we at times do some spot checks, because if you are an infrastructure department, you will have a challenge wherein you are told that the Huop Dam is at 60%. Sitting at head office, the report might tell you that we are at 60%, You take the report to the DG takes it to the minister, and you'll find that at times you'll be told that the 60% constitutes something else. So we also do some spot checks just to get to understand what constitutes this 60, so that the minister and the DG can really be well informed to say, I'm told them A is at 60, and I have an understanding of the 60% that is being reported, because that is an area wherein you will always struggle when you are working with percentages. So the reports are then verified, cleaned up, and we produce the quarterly reports for the department. And these quarterly reports will ultimately lead to an annual report at the end of the year. You work on the quarter-to-quarter basis, at the end you produce an annual report. And there is one reason that makes it really very, very important for us to do this sort of ad hoc verification and the cleaning up. Although the Auditor General doesn't express an opinion on performance information, the non-financial data, they are still required to audit that information in terms of the Public Audit Act. They do audit that information, and I was reading yesterday on the business side of the Star newspaper. The Auditor General now is putting on the table the issue of starting to phase in the auditing of non-financial information. So that is why we have looked at this critically in the past years to say, let us start cleaning, because the financials only cannot really tell a good story. The financials goes with the actual delivery. So that is why we are taking this very seriously. So moving forward, we have realized that, yes, there is work in progress in terms of what we are doing, but there is really a need to have a systematic process wherein you can automate whatever you are doing, so that if we are asked today to produce a report on what has been done from 1st of April to date, we can just easily press a button and have real-time information. But as it stands now, if we are asked for information, one will have to go out, try and call all the DDGs to say, please provide us with information, because it's a manual system, you need to get somebody to give information. So we are working on a system, a monitoring and evaluation system, which will be automated. We are looking at the issue of interfacing with other systems, which is a long-term thing. As it stands, we will have that system that will not fully interface with other systems that we are having within the department. And we are also bringing an element of a balanced scorecard within that system. We are very much aware that the balanced scorecard approach theoretically seems to be a private sector initiative, but we are trying to customize it to ensure that the four perspectives within the balanced scorecard are talking to what we are doing as a department. And the scorecard will assist us to cascade the strategic goals up to directorate level. So we'll have that kind of a system where in within a branch, you will have a situation where we agree as to who is responsible or how many capturers within a particular branch will be allowed to ensure that we capture information. So what we will do, we will have a situation where in the strategic plan gets captured into that system, and a set of indicators are agreed upon, and there is data that is associated to each indicator, so that each time we need information, we will know that with regard to this particular indicator, if I press a button, it can really give me information that I need. And we can also be in a position to indicate to a DDG to say, on area A, there is a red flash, instead of a current situation where we wait for them to tell us whether they have achieved or not. So if you have an automated system, you can have a situation where you capture this data, you'll go to them and say, you are underperforming, the system tells me that this is red, then you are not moving in this area. So there are objectives that have been put forward with regard to this system. One being to ensure systematic and coherent planning and reporting within the department and by its statutory bodies. As it stands, we are sitting with a bit of a challenge wherein strategic plans are produced for the department, and the entities that are reporting to the department are also producing corporate plans or business plans, which is informed by the legislative mandates. However, the challenge that you sit in, you will find that if you look at the plans for the entities, you will not find common set of indicators that you can say, I've got 15 water boards. Out of all these plans, when I read them, they are common set of indicators. So that is an area that we have realized that we need to work on that, so that if you press on indicator A, you should know that all the 14 water boards are really talking about the same issue. As it stands, plans are produced, but then that is an area that really doesn't show a full alignment. Effective alignment of the department's strategic plan with government-wide programs. There's a range of government programs that are currently being implemented. The system will really assist us to track that down. For instance, you find that there are different reports that are needed for different reasons. For instance, you'll find that you need to produce cluster reports. You need to produce annual reports. You need to produce reports that relate to the ENE, the estimate of national expenditure. As it stands, you'll have to spend the time to produce each of the reports. But if you have the system, you will know that this information can be readily available from my system. Then I can easily get this because the system will allow you to really capture different sets of data. Then there is an issue around the effective implementation of the strategic and business plans. I've already alluded to this indirectly because this will ensure that the effectiveness part of it will be a situation wherein you can proactively track down performance of branches rather than waiting for the branches to indicate to you what is has been done to up to a particular period. Then there's an issue around to encourage objective evaluation of individuals and organizational performance. Although currently we have a situation where senior managers are aligning performance agreements to the business plans, you find that there are still aspects wherein an individual might come and report to have achieved X, Y, Z. And when you go into the plan of the department, you'll find that the department hasn't actually achieved. And how do you start bringing alignment to that to say, if the department has not achieved generally, how do we then move towards allowing a situation of rewarding good performance to individuals? So that's an area that, I mean, we believe the system will help us to say, no, there is, I mean, this issue of the department being at 50%. How do you as individuals come then and indicate to have achieved? Then the issue of institutional oversight on the entities, as I indicated, as it stands, we rely on the entities to submit the report, the annual report and the plans. If they haven't submitted, it becomes difficult for the department to sit and say, they are at this level on this particular area. So this is one issue that we believe the system will also help us to say, let's check how far are we with the indicators that the entities have put together and that they are supposed to deliver on. And there's an issue of improved compliance to various statutory requirements. So as I've already touched on this, that there are different reports for different reasons. You'll have a situation where in when the system is in, you can be able to have information timely available. Then if one may give an illustration or an example with this illustration around the M&E system, as it stands, we do produce plans in that manual way, and at times we'll find that the approach seems to be not really fully integrated. So we believe the system will help us to ensure that we capture the plan at department level, which will normally involve the minister giving direction, the deputy minister, your top management team, where you'll come up with a strategy of the department on the long term. And we'll also capture the business plans now for the branches, which are aligned to the strategic plan. And you'll also go down to the other levels of the directorates now to ensure that you have plans for the directorates that are covered, so that, I mean, you can just press a button and say, under branch A, out of 15 directorates, then I can pull out information to see how far we've gone. So when you move to the next slide, this is just a diagram of the journey that will travel in producing that particular scorecard within the M&E system. I won't bore you much about this then, because, I mean, there's a lot of work that still needs to be done. But the issue is we'll start with the vision, mission, going to the values, reconfirming and also reconfirm those perspectives and objectives and other areas, up to the area where we'll start doing the monitoring and evaluation, where then, I mean, progress will be tracked down. Move to the next one. Well, this just shows in the issue around the balance scorecard, the performance management tool, just to say, we will be doing high-level monitoring to measure performance at organizational level, and this will also be cascaded at operational level to say what is happening at operational level. And at the end, what will be produced is an aligned picture wherein whatever happens at every level of the organization, whether a person is sitting at the lowest office, when we look at whatever he or she is doing, at the end, that performance should be able to be linked with the mandate of the organization to say, oh, this person is doing this thing at this lower office, but we can easily link it up with what the department has agreed upon at the high level. Then, So the issue again on the performance management, as I indicated, so the system, as it will be designed, will really foster a situation wherein assessment of individuals should be preceded by what the organization has achieved, and coming down to say if the organization has achieved at this level, and at branch level, how far have the branches performed? There comes issue of individuals, rather than starting with individuals without looking at the overall performance of the organization. So then move to the next slide. So this is a journey that we will embark upon. It's not an overnight thing that will happen. There's a lot of work that needs to be done. But as it stands now with the PSP that we are working with, we will only have the system automated in February 2011. But I must emphasize that there is a lot of change management that needs to happen, given the fact that people are used to be sitting in particular comfort zones. And if you will now come with a situation wherein you will tell a person that you haven't performed on this and you haven't achieved that, it's going to be difficult, then we are still looking at how do we bring in this picture. The system might be ready in 2011, but then the actual change that we envisage might take another year to really bring everyone on board, given the challenges that one has mentioned. I thank you.
Thank you very much. Before we take the next presentation, is this a new system? Is this a craft? Is it a new thing? Is it already in operation?
No, as it stands, we are busy developing this system. We are in the fifth month of the development of the system. Whilst we are having the manual one, then we are still working on the, I will say, what is happening currently is the preparatory phase. The actual software will only come in around the next year. Then we are putting in the information that will really get into the system, because the system should be informed by something. You can't just bring in a system. So we are preparing what information needs to be in the system, and we'll only bring in the system next year. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Did you?
Thanks, Chair. I'm going to be presenting wearing my cap as a DDG Corporate Services, although it's written the acting DG. This is the program that I manage. Chair, I'm not going to waste your time. I'm going to steam ahead with the slide number 3, key functional areas. This program, Chair, entails the human resources component. We've got plus minus 12,300 people at Dwarf, and almost 6,000 people are in the regions. Information technology, we've got a huge budget because of the billing system, the monitoring of the stations in the dams, and the budget is plus minus 200 million. Communication, gender and disability, legal services, facilities, and logistical management. This is the program, the components of the program. In terms of the overview of the past achievement, Chair, I just want to indicate, fortunately, yesterday we had a meeting, an ex-co meeting with the minister. Before June, there was a structure that was developed, a new structure that was developed. We had to deal, Chair, with the issues of fragmentation, duplication within the department, also the issues of silos and tests within the department, and we came up with a new structure. In terms of the public service regulation, the structure must be presented to the Minister of Public Service and Administration for consultation. So the new minister came at the time when the structure was at DBSA, so the structure had to be recalled back. So yesterday the structure was discussed. The minister has decided to put the structure on hold so that we can begin to engage with the mandate of DWARF and the core functions of DWARF. So we'll be having a discussion with the minister around the mandate, exactly what is the mandate and the function. And she also believes that when we start at that level, we'll be able to get a coherent structure. So the structure is now under review, the one that has been submitted to DPSA. However, it was a process, Chair, that took almost 6 months because we had to really start from a point of an operating model and defining exactly what are the principles that must inform the design for DWAF and what will help DWAF deliver in terms of the program of action of government. Also, under the Chair, we had the human resources strategy. We developed the strategy. Chairperson, the strategy represent a total paradigm shift in the way in the public services manage human resources. Although the challenge normally you have when you manage corporate services in government, it's a regulated environment. It's unlike managing, you know, corporate services in the private sector. Here you've got prescripts. Recruitment has to be done in terms of the prescript. The bursaries has to be allocated in terms of the prescript. Special leave has got to be done in terms of the prescript. So you will never run away from the notion of operational efficiency. You can't really start to say, I'm going to talk about strategic agile when your operations are not at the right level. So you need to make sure that there's a balance between your operational efficiency and your strategic efficiency. So the strategy aims to address that balance. We also develop a human resources development strategy. Really, it's about the capacity of the department to deliver. You've raised the issue, Chairperson and members, around capacity. Also, it's an issue that yesterday we grappled with at EXCO with the minister, because he kept on saying, you go all over and say, people, you don't have capacity. Can you give a detailed analysis of that capacity? Is it in your planning? Is it in your construction? Is it in your design? So we've agreed yesterday that we are going to have a special workshop and deliberate on capacity, exactly in specific terms, before you even go out to another country and say, we need to help you with help us with capacity. You need to be clear in your mind. What capacity are you talking about? And in which area do you require capacity? And what type of capacity? And also when, Chair, you talk about capacity, you can go for a process of buying. When you buy, you go out and buy capacity. Then you bring talent. You can also go out for a process of binding. That is, you can move people around within the organization, really, to look at whether people are placed in the right seats and are also sitting in the right positions. That's something that we don't normally do easily in the public service. At the same time, the Public Service Act also allows you to go and engage in secondment. You can get somebody from the private sector, you can get somebody from a parastatal, you can second that person for a certain period to come and do. And what is it? I think the challenge from an agile perspective, we are only government, you know, concerned about just employing people from the market. We're not used into really applying the different techniques of recruitment and selection to say, I can second somebody, I don't have to. If you are building capacity, it takes time. So you need to be creative around the type of capacity you need and the strategies that you employ to bring that capacity. So, Chair, the issue of capacity is really on top of the agenda of the minister and the department. We also, Chair, developed policies. And what informed our priority around policies? It was an audit report. We used not to have a policy on bursaries. We used not to have a policy on special leave. We used not to have a policy on recruitment and selection, policy on performance development. Those are the policies that last year we developed and we signed and approved and are being implemented currently. Because also when you give bursaries to people, you give people money, then you have to make sure that they've signed performance, they've signed contracts. If they leave you before the term, you're able to recover the money of the state. So that's why we have to have the policies in place. Another issue, Chairperson, that has improved over years is the issue of compliance around performance agreements. It's been a struggle in the past to have, even at a senior management level, people signing performance agreements. Last year, we've managed to have 98% of the people signing performance agreements. And in terms of the cabinet instruction, we still have to engage in a disciplinary hearing around the ones that have not signed performance agreements, because in terms of the new directive, we have to deal with those issues. Then another achievement, Chairperson, is the financial disclosures. And I'm sure you've been reading the media around financial disclosures. It's also an area that the Auditor General is quite strict about. We have to make sure that senior managers, by the 31st of May, each and every year, they declare their financial interest and business interest. And the documents have to be submitted to the Office of the Public Service Commission by the 31st of May. So we managed to get at least 97%. And what we do during that process, we also want people to declare if they're doing work that remunerative work after working hours. There are people that are working, there are others are lecturing after hours. We have also to deal with those things. So we use the process to validate that interest when people are doing other jobs. Also, Chair, we came up with a concept of a learning academy, and this is a concept one really was planned with the professional, the Engineering Council of South Africa, with the academic institution, really to see how do we build capacity, and the focus of the academy is around the technical skills. We have an aging workforce. We've got, for example, we have a person who's in the infrastructure development branch. If you ask anybody about the Lesotho Highlands, there's one person who can, in the country, has a solid understanding of that project. The question we need to be asking ourselves, if that person were to resign tomorrow, what next? Or die tomorrow. So these are some of the, I think, the debates we have to grapple within the department to say, how do we build capacity to get to a level of making people seasoned engineers? They can be able to go and look at the dam and say, there's no problem here, you can fix the dam in this fashion. So we've got those people that we need to build within the department. We also shared developing a master systems plan that really addresses the issues of technology gaps and omissions in our technology platforms. And this also was an audit query in the past, and we've managed to deal with it this year. Last year, Chairperson, we launched a women's organization. However, we have put the whole process on hold because the minister has been asking fundamental questions, and the questions really are around what are the implications of this organization in terms of the new Department of Women. So we have to step back and ask ourselves questions around the interaction between this organization that we wanted to create for women in the sector, but the aim of this was really to create a formal platform for women in the sector to interact and share knowledge around the water resources issues. Vacancies last year, Chairperson, from September until the 31st of March this year, we launched a drive around recruitment and selection. We had a vacancy rate of 45%, and we managed to reduce the vacancy rate to 28%. However, we still have to, as of fact, we are aiming for this current financial year, we are aiming for 10%, and the Public Service Commission has set a target that departments should not have a vacancy rate that goes beyond 10%. So we are aiming to reduce the 28%. Chairperson, we also introduced a change journey in the department, and the change journey was really triggered by a number of issues in the department. There were issues around lack of management and leadership. There were issues around systems inefficiencies. There were issues around, you know, the us and them, the tensions between support and line. And the change journey, in a sense, was a response strategy to deal with those negatives within the culture of the organization. However, with the minister coming on board, it's another area where we had to review. We had to look at the investment we're making in this. There was a sense in the organization that we've invested a lot of money on the change journey, and the projects that had impact on the ground were not properly funded. So what the minister has decided, we are going to continue with the change journey, but we are going to revisit the type of investment. That is investment in terms of time, investment in terms of money, investment in terms of effort, that we rather put that on the projects that really affect the life of the people on the ground. So we will continue, but we will reduce and change the approach in terms of taking the change journey forward. In terms of challenges, Chair, what I've done, I've really given you a challenge, and I've given you a response intervention, and then I've said in the strategy, if you go and look in the strategy of DWAF, then you find that response. So it's really to say the challenge, there are interventions in the strategy that are planned to respond to that challenge. The challenge of attraction and retention, Chair, this is a real problem. Although in the department currently what we're doing, we don't necessarily, I think it's the whole perspective in the public service. You have a sort of a reactive approach to retention. What I mean when I say reactive, a person goes to another department, applies for a job. Then he comes to the department and said, I'm going to another department of police. Then he says, the manager then says, no, I want to retain you, don't go. That is reactive. Because we wait for people to apply for jobs, and in actual fact, we are promoting job hopping. Because people now, they stay 1 year in a job, then they apply for jobs, then they come and say, no, I need a counter offer. So it's also the way we are doing the retention. It's not proper. We need to develop a proactive strategy where we begin to identify critical projects and say what skills and competencies do we require to develop, to implement those projects. Based on that, then you identify the post, not the people. Because the minute you start to talk about people, then you become subjective in the whole notion of retention. And that's why it has raised some tensions within the organization, because it also has not been done in a quite a structured and objective approach. So this is one of the issues we're dealing with. Also, Chairperson, around retention is the issue also of performance management. When we did the retention, we've got the retention strategy that was developed in 2007. One of the issues that came from people who left DWAF, there was a sense that incentives around performance were not given to A players. They felt that everybody was getting a performance bonus. And because of that, also that created a negative, in terms of a negative impact. People felt that it's no use to be an excellent worker here because I get a performance bonus and the other person who's not performing sitting next to me gets a performance bonus. However, we are also working in terms of making sure that you are able to categorize your A players and make sure that even your B players, if the person is a C player, that does not necessarily mean you have to forget about that person. The question as a manager, you need to be asking, how do I make someone do the C player to become a B player? How do I make a B player to become an A player? But this is a responsibility that must be owned by managers, and it's something that we are grappling with in government general, because the ownership of people is not with human resources. The ownership is with line managers. They must manage people, and they are the ones who must recognize people. They are the ones who must reward people. They are the ones who must implement consequences when people are not performing. But it's a paradigm shift that we need firstly to start by building capacity within the line managers to begin to own the human resources that they are managing. The other issue, Chairperson, is the OSDP. I think you know about this one. The Minister of Public Service and Administration is already negotiating, particularly for engineers. We were involved in the process for engineers and scientists in order to review their salary so that we can retain them better. Another issue is really around the culture. We're also using the change journey to work on the culture. There's an issue, Chairperson, also around resolution of grievances. Sometimes when we take long to resolve grievances, people become demoralized and others leave government. So we are trying to adhere to the protocol document that has been developed by the Public Service Commission to resolve grievances within 30 days. Meeting employment equity, Chair, this is really a problem. Particularly, you'll notice that within the technical field, there's very few, you know, women that have technical capabilities. We are currently, we're supposed to be at 50, and we are currently at 42, 50. Cabinet has set a target for women in senior management position at 50. We are aiming to get at 50 next year. And 2% people with disabilities. Also, we are grappling that person a bit. We are aiming for 1%. We are currently at not 0.78%. We are aiming for 2%, but eventually cabinet wants us to have 2%. So these are the areas that we're a little bit grappling on. The other one, Chairperson, is really to improve the public understanding of water. When you interact with people on the ground, they don't even understand what is the role of water within the whole value chain of water. So it's something that we need to engage the public in terms of ensuring that they understand the value of water. They understand issues around water conservation. They understand why it is important for them to introduce water efficiency measures. So we are also involved in that. Gender equity and women empowerment. We also have Chairperson, a disability policy. We are trying to create a conducive environment for people with disability to be able to work at DWAF and also make the meaningful contribution. And the last one, Chairperson, is the also the issues around leadership development. We are also working on that one and increasing the skills base of the department. The rationale, Chairperson, there's an issue where you said, what is the rationale for looking at this? I've always said to people, if we talk about a developmental state, human resources is central to the whole notion of a developmental state. So the starting point is really to have human resources. Also, you need a structure for you to deliver. Although I've said also to the minister, the structure is not the only issue that will make the department deliver. Behavior of people, the attitudes are very important. the level of competence of people is very important. Management capability is very important. Leadership is very important. All those things are very important. So it's really a shopping list of things that will make sure that we have the right organization. And also the monitoring and evaluation execution of programs, we have to make sure that we really monitor the programs and the execution that is taking place. And chairperson, also leadership is quite important in an organization. If you are really aiming for a high-performing organization, recruitment and selection talks to the developmental agenda. Skills development is also central to the issue of building a pool of skills for social and economic development. Another issue, chairperson, that we've really deliberated around skills development and human resources development. We don't necessarily building skills for dwarf. We're building skills for the sector. Even we need to be open-minded about also building skills for the entire country, not necessarily for water, because there's also an integrated approach towards how we do things in government. The last slide, Chair, I've just given you a snapshot of the budget for corporate services. Quite, if you look at the $7 billion budget, what we have is really peanuts. It's just a drop in the ocean. We've got for the structure, as the CFO was saying, that we are not going to be filling some of the positions that we budgeted for, and the money is going to be sort of moved to critical projects that are going to affect people on the ground. However, there are areas, your compliance and monitoring, that we need to improve, climate change, that we need to improve, license backlog. Those three areas, and areas I also indicated to the minister, we really have to go big bet and build capacity because they're critical for economic development. Women empowerment, we've got 4.2. Recruitment and selection, chase the filling of position, which we have to prioritize as a department, and skills development, 10 million. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Acting DG. I'm sure you'll be comfortable if I don't say I say acting.
Okay.
Not a busy. Thanks very much. That was the last. Is it the last one? Is it not for tomorrow? The State of the Nation. Tomorrow, man. So I wasn't confused about it. Yeah. I think it's the last presentation for today, and I think we all agree here that the presentations were very good. Very, 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 very good acting teacher. We've learned a lot of what you guys are doing there. Because today, it's good to just know what you are doing. And then assist you where necessary. I will open then for questions and clarities. But we must remember that the monitoring and evaluation system, it's still in a planning stage, you know. Maybe if we discuss that one, we'll have to put something extra and say that we think we should do this. But when I was listening to, where's that gentleman? Akakongo. Is he out? Okay. When we were listening to Mr. Tibela, I think it's a good plan. It will avoid us sitting here and then pointing at some of the issues that we think that the department didn't care about, like CMA. Maybe when you do that evaluation, and then you will come and tell us, good, what is it that you think? What is it that needed to be done in order for us to get them running? So those are some of the things that I think that we needed to observe as this portfolio committee. But they're open for questions. I've observed in that day, Skosana, and then Mamundude, and then Honorable Morgan, Honorable Lovemore, the last one will be Dr. Liang.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, we listened to a very, very wonderful presentation. Both presentations that we got now, presently, they are so fruitful and they give hope to this department, a future hope for that matter, a change, a transformation. Chairperson, a worry or the input that I want to make, I should think as you are planning for a future, you must not forget the structures that are in place currently in terms of the operation. Particularly at regional level, the visibility of your offices at regional level is very minimal. In terms of assisting the municipalities to perform their services, it's very minimal. And I must say, this document vis-a-vis the development that is taking place at the grassroots level, you'll find a very, very, very big gap within the institute, because the document is talking about the theory, but practically, let's take care of that. Let's go to the regional level and check those managers. What are they managing? How are they managing? Are they assisting the community? Why the communities are having questions, crisis, and planning marches, problems in terms of delivery? I should think we must go down. But all in all, I must commend your plans. This is a future hope for this department. We will always be supporting you and working together with you. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Really, today, really, this department is really refreshing. It seems as if you have got a team here, Chairperson, of people who are prepared to work. And I think I really, wish to add to what you have said earlier, that they should keep it up instead of, letting it, down. And I'm sitting and I'm saying, if we can have in many other departments, people who are committed and passionate about their work, because you can be how good, but passion and vision. You can be a very good leader, but if you are a leader that does not have a vision and passion, you are just good as not a leader. So here I can see that the acting DG, I see the passion in her. When she's speaking about her work, and I think if then that can also cascade down to other levels within the department, I'm telling you that this department really will do very well. If I can just come to just a comment on the selected KPAs, where we are talking about the alignment. The organizational alignment that you say it is required for the department to be able to, to have the right capacity to deliver. I think for me, one would want just to understand, because sometimes these things are all good, in paper, but sometimes the practicality is in the implementation. Of that. I always believe in everything that you need to have set yourself some time frames to say, by this period, we should have achieved, the certain, goals, because it does then give a difference. Even when we come back 6 months down the line, I would not want you to come back with the same slide that is still talking about this alignment. For me, what is lacking, Chairperson, is some time frames in some of the areas which it can satisfy me better than that. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. One of the questions I have in terms of, it is a capacity question, I guess, and really looking forward in terms of the great challenge you have in order to enforce what you do, is whether there are synergies that can be created now between the Blue Scorpions and the Green Scorpions. I remember last year, when I was sitting on the Environment Committee, we worked on the Environmental Laws Amendment Act, which in one draft of it extended that act to include the accreditation of Blue Scorpions. Now, I'm just trying to rack. I don't have it. I've been looking at my computer. I can't find it. If I'm not mistaken, that we didn't actually pass it in the very, very end for some reason. I make it more as a, if I'm wrong, please correct me. But the broader question I want to know is, what kind of synergies can we create out of this? Can we create more, notwithstanding the specific nature of certain water science and so on? Can we get to a situation where we create more generalists amongst our environmental management inspectors? I mean, I guess you can have a biodiversity inspector who's, you know, good in the parks and so on, and you can have particular water inspectors. So that's my first question. And is it something that you're engaging with the other half of your ministry with actively? Because I know there are about 1,000 EMIs in your sister department now, or Sami twin department, I'm not sure what it is. About 1,000 EMIs there. How many blue scorpions do you have now? And are you going forward, even if there is slightly differing mandates, are you actually going to use the same methodology, training mechanisms, accredited institutions to actually do all of this kind of training in order to roll out a greater number of trainers? And related to that, I've actually never thought about this for point four. If you look at the list of EMI inspectors and you see 1,000, you'll notice that they are accredited to various institutions like Sand Parks, SANB, Isimvelo, Cape Nature, and so on. Are the blue scorpions, do they all work for the old DWAF, or now Department of Water? Or like the EMIs under the environment sector, do they also work under other institutions? So, for example, can an accredited blue scorpion work for the Etigueni municipality? Or are they only yours? Because that is a difference between, if that isn't the case, so is it the case that then it's a big difference between the green and the blue scorpions? Not that I think that it's a particular challenge. But, of course, if you're not doing that, then surely one of the ways of increasing the number of blue scorpions is to do what the environmental management inspectors do, of really just accrediting people who work for other institutions. Because I could see how an accredited blue scorpion could work quite well at a municipal level those kind of things. Or yeah, I guess I'll leave it there. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, facetiously, I suppose, I'm actually very interested always with government departments to see the emphasis on women, because I am one, but particularly with this department, because in 1993, I was actually the National Department of Water Affairs and Forestry Woman of the Year. In 1994, Professor Carter Osmal became the minister. He did away with a Woman of the Year competition because he said it was sexist. So we were not allowed to have it anymore. So it's very interesting to see all the woman empowerment that is going on. My question, Chair, is actually on gender and disability. It was presented as part of the financial presentation, or the figure was presented as 8.7 million in the office of the Chief Directorate of the Director, Gender and Disability. 8.7 million, but you are on your way to your target as far as women are concerned, but the disability seems to have been a problem for years, and not just this department, but for every department. If we are putting 8.7 million into a directorate for gender and disability within our department, why are we still... What are our problems? Why are we still only at 1% disabled? What are the stumbling blocks? Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Chair, let me repeat my feeling about the manner in which the department has been presenting. You know, the manner in which they put their story I don't know whether it is deliberate on their side. You know, when one is humble, then you tend to be neutralized. You know, I only hope that they must not neutralize that. We want to do our oversight in a manner that is rigorous. I only hope that the person, you don't allow us to be neutralized. I mean, really, the face of this department, it demonstrates a lot of passion and willingness to do the job, let alone the challenges that are there, and in the manner in which they present them. Especially this M&E thing, I've been saying this for the past 10 years, to say we need a section that is going to be at this level, dealing precisely with monitoring and evaluation. Thanks God that we've got Mr. Tibela. You know, this program, this envisaged manner in which they are going to do this, I mean, it responds directly to what M&E is, because he says this is what we are going to do in terms of monitoring. And at the end of the financial year, it is evaluation, because you monitor during the progress of the work. I mean, I'm totally covered, but they must not wait for 2011 and 12. You must do that now, even if you don't have a fully fledged structure. At your level, you can complement each other and do the job up until you have the budget to actually populate the structure. Then on HR issues, I want to check maybe from the department if their legal section is up to standard in terms of ensuring that there are no cases of litigation. And also, UMEM has already responded on the retention strategy. Also on the additional staff to establishment at the regional levels, you'll find that there are people who are said to be, we are redundant, we are this number. And there was that Resolution 7 that was taken that was responding to the issue of those that were not incorporated in the current structures. So is that situation still the same? Maybe there are those that are untrainable, and is there any exit strategy thereof? Because if one is untrainable, you must sit now and consider an exit strategy. But an exit strategy that will not contribute to unemployment and further paupers out there. I think those are the issues. I'm sure you are so fortunate. Because in a number of departments, you don't find this kind of irresponsiveness on the part of the department. I think Omamundu will definitely have their hands cut, you know. I don't know why this generosity on the part of the department. I hope something is going to change. I don't know, it's because we are led by 100% women in this department. Thank you, sir.
It's true. That's one of the reasons why they're so good, because women are needy. Thank you very much to members of parliament, and thanks to you, acting DG. I also think that the presentation was very good. I'm also very impressed about the issue of monitoring. If you remember, Honorable Luyenge, when as a party we sit in our own cocoon and look at ourselves, one of the things that we discovered that we will never be able to succeed when it comes to service delivery is because of the absence of a monitoring system within the department. But we said to ourselves, if we can have such a system within the different departments, maybe we will do what you guys are doing today. And I hope that departments like, what is this new name of local government, they can also copy what you are doing. But with your relationship within that department, I think you'll be able to assist those people in the corporate governance, corporate governance, because it seems as if there are serious challenges as far as monitoring is concerned within that department. Other thing you raised, DG,
women empowerment, you know, women empowerment. And also you raise the issue here, improve public understanding of an involvement when it comes to water issues. And then one wonders what kind of this maybe a campaigns, what kind of campaigns that we're talking about. Because when you talk to environment, you get the understanding of how communities are being involved, you know. You've got Obuisa Ipeg, you've got what, you've got all those things. Then you understand with the environment what it is. But with water, I'm seated here just wondering, is there anything that I can think of that I've seen on the ground? I know the person who likes it, that is Kosan, that I've seen on the ground where communities are being involved when it comes to water. But I can tell you there is many that I know about the environment, you know. I've been to all sites, even the sites there, recycling and all those things, where people are involved, you know, with the department and all those things. But with water, I think there is still a lot that one needs to learn about, which involves the communities. Then we will then give to you to respond to some of the questions and the statement that has been made by members. But we agree. I mean, if you are doing well, we can't always fight with people when they're doing well. Ours is not to fight with the department, it's to oversight. And when we do oversight, we are not always expecting to get the negative of the department. We want the positives from that department. And I'm sure under this new portfolio committee, led by myself, of course, I don't want to lead, I'm still saying that, I don't want to lead dead wood. I want to lead people like yourselves, you know. I want, and next time Mouse is Alama, I don't want to see four men, you know, surrounding yourself. You must empower these women. This empowerment that we spoke about here, we must see that in action. We want to see those women coming here, telling us what they are doing, you know, yeah, and positive things. And you are not expecting you to bring women because they are wearing dresses, you see. We want women who knows what they're doing. We want women who has been empowered by yourself. Because you are a woman, you are empowered, and you must always be biased when it comes to women issues. Try to empower all those women. But I'm not saying that you must disregard what the men are doing in the department. It's very good what they are doing, and we are very much impressed with the CFO report. And also this new programs that we've put in place is very much encouraging. I feel proud to be a chair of this committee. If we are going to keep it this way, we are keeping it. We'll give over to you then to respond to some of those questions.
Thanks, Chair, and honourable members for the comments. Chair, let me start with the one around the regions. I agree fully with you that the regions are the implementing arm of the department. And they are the ones, as a fact, that are close to municipalities. That's why on Friday, I can just indicate to you that yesterday, one of the things that happened at Exco, regions were presenting to the minister the hotspots within municipalities, the issues around purification. And on Friday, we've got a special top management meeting where we are going to be reallocating funds to deal with the problems that are happening in the regions. But you are so correct to say they are the most important arm of the department, and we are putting more resources to make sure that they are properly capacitated. The issue around the time frames, Honourable Member, I agree fully with you. It's for you to be able to monitor how we are doing. We need to come up with time frames. I think for future of the presentation should capture the time frame so that you can monitor us. Then the third issue are the issue around synergies. With this one, you are just spot on, because when the minister came as the Minister of Water and Environmental Affairs, one of the we had a breakaway session where I was expected to present a position on how do we create synergies between water and environment. And I presented, I can just share with you, I presented two models. I presented a shared services model and a center of expertise model. And my argument for center of expertise model was mainly based on compliance and monitoring. The blue scorpions, because the minister also made a comment that she doesn't want to have blue scorpions and green scorpions. Where we can create synergies, we can sort of work around that. So I've presented the two models. She's expecting us to work on the two models. Also, another area is the area of climate change. particularly if you look at the environment, they're well-resourced when it comes to international. Also, that's another thing we're looking at. We're looking at which department has the capability. Mm-hmm. We can then begin to create a learning culture. We then leverage the resources around environmental affairs in the area of international. Also around communication, when people see a minister, they're not interested in a minister that this department is environment. We're saying they're seeing a minister of water and environmental affairs. Then we need to package messages for the same audience within the context of water and environment. So that's just one other aspect. Another area we identified was the legal services. Legal services, we also identify that area that we can, particularly if there's a litigation, there's a case. The case is against the Minister of Water and Environment, Child Affairs. It's not a case for water affairs. So we have to create sort of a common platform for us to share the expertise. But the minister has to approve the model around the Buscopion. Also, the issues around accreditation, I want to be honest with you, we are very far. Environmental affairs are just, they are too far when it comes to the issues of compliance and monitoring. There's a lot for us to learn from them. We do have people, although we call them Buscopion, they don't have any training, they don't have the certificate, there's no formal accreditation. We just gave them to make them passionate and to love their jobs. We gave them the name. But I think we need to get into a process of making them, getting them to the right level with environmental affairs, and we can even share expertise in that area. And it's an area that I think there's a lot for us to learn from environmental affairs. Then there's an issue also around legal services. Honorable Member, I have to agree with you. We don't have sufficient capacity in legal services. Tomorrow we have the interviews for the head of legal services for the department. That's a starting point because we need to build capacity. What you find, you've got people at an ASD level, level 9, level 10, but they need to be led. So we need a seasoned legal person to lead them. So tomorrow we're doing the interviews to fill the position, and we've got close 20 cases of litigation, but they take time. Particularly when you look at illegal abstraction cases, those cases also take time. So we do have those cases of litigation, but we submit quarterly reports on outstanding cases to the minister for information so that she's on board around what we're doing around the issue. Honorable, around additional staff, I have to be honest with you, it's a real struggle in government. At Dwarf, we took people, when it was amalgamated, we took people from the homeland system. And we never did a sort of a skills audit and a proper placement of people. So sort of people were just taken and sort of put as groups. So the starting point also to be within the fair labor practice provisions. The starting point is to do a skills analysis. Have your job profiles. You do the skills analysis. Then you do something that we call, in terms of regulation, Resolution 7 of 2002 in government that informed the process. Then you match the person against the job profile. If the person doesn't suit, the first thing you're expected to do legally is to say, how do I retrain you and shift you to another component? If that doesn't happen, then you also need to look at changing the career of a person, but you need to do that with the person. However, there's a new dispensation that was introduced by Cabinet last year, an employee-initiated severance package. People are encouraged to take the package. However, it is difficult for a young person to take a package because where is he going to get a job? Particularly if a person is not educated. So it's not necessarily helping us to deal with the issues of additional people to establishment. Another problem that we're having, we've got close to 80 people that have not been accepted by municipalities during transfers. They said they are not prepared to take anybody who's 55 and older. Now we are sitting with these people. We really need to go back. In some cases, some municipalities are sort of flexible. You go and engage with them to say the person can do the job. The age is not an issue. So the municipalities that are open-minded, then we do the negotiations around people. There's a group of people that we need to engage with to see how do we then place them within the organization, within the department. Even we need to go further, maybe to look at water boards, because water boards are the institutions of the department. How then do we work with water boards to deal with the issue of additional to establishment. But because we also have not finalized the transfers of schemes to municipalities, so we still have a core of people that are additional to establishment. But as an organization, we do, with the support of the Department of Public Service and Administration, we need to come up with a strategy. Eventually, we need to get rid of additional to establishment, because this is not good for the organization, even for your budgeting purposes in terms of the compensation budget. It does compound your budgeting processes if you sort of you have them. But we still have that as well. Also, it's sort of linked to historical distortions that we've been carrying over. Then the campaign, say you are correct. We are not as sophisticated as environment around campaigns. Our campaigns are mainly linked to national days. For example, you've got Water Week, you've got sanitation. Beyond that, we have not really sort of step up our performance around that. Matter of fact, yesterday the minister was saying, when am I going out to the people? What projects do you have here that I can go out and talk to? She was really saying that yesterday. So we have to think that you need to think outside the box. You don't have to do things that are aligned to national days. You need to come up with your own events and campaigns where I can get close to the ground. So it's an area, I must be honest, that we are really trying to sort of to get things right. That's the end of my responses. Thank you very much, Chairperson, for the comment.
The question of the challenges about with respect to the disabled and why activity doesn't increase.
Honourable Member, I also have to be honest with you. Here, the starting point, we need to begin to even educate managers about the notion that if people have disabilities, they won't perform. The actual fact, if you look at the Employment Equity Act, it goes further and makes provision for reasonable accommodation. And these are also some of the things you need to get people to understand. The managers, it's really a responsibility. What we've done at DWAF in actual fact for this year, in the performance agreement of managers, we've put a 2%. So it's going to be an indicator. It's going to affect. That's the only way sometimes in government. If you want people to implement, you just have to tighten their performance agreement, then you force them to deal with the issues. So we've taken that strategy. But, yeah. And also, we sort of, the budget issue of 8.7, what we did last year, Chair, with the launch of the women's organization, that's where we were spending money. However, also, Honourable Member, I need to mention to you that we do have a person who's leading the program on disability. During the 16 days of activism, you know, your 16 days of activism, he is involved in with communities around, you know, the issues around disability. We are more in the advocacy role, but we have not necessarily gotten to the point of implementing specific measures around disability. So the funding is mainly used for gender mainstreaming. We are not so strong around disability mainstreaming. It's an area that I think we need serious improvement and focus around. Thank you, Chairperson.
Repentula Zonke, that is Kosan. I see you smiling there.
Yeah, Chairperson, after the DG has responded to our questions, I'm a little bit touched on the issue of absorbing the staff members on the system by the local government and the national. If we understand the terminology of cooperative governance, I should think we need to sympathize with those people and try to absorb them somehow. We cannot just come up with a transformation or the new system and drop some of the people from the system. It will be wrong. We'll be creating a very wrong precedent. I should think, try to negotiate this thing, and if there are problems, talk to the minister, talk to the Minister of Cooperative Governance. These people, they must be absorbed anyway. I'm talking a language of a unionist now. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks, DG. We've come to the end of our meeting for today. We are continuing tomorrow. 9:30, M46 is the venue for tomorrow. But we're intending to be here until late tomorrow, but because of the sitting tomorrow, the deputy president and also questions for peace and stability, some of our members do belong to peace and stability portfolio committees, so we'll be here until just after 1 o'clock tomorrow. We'll take both water affairs and environment. Before there was a talk that the two is going to be merged, comrades were very much, let me say, members were very much worried and say that, that good environmental affairs, you are taking them to water affairs. Let's hope that they will take over water affairs, or water affairs won't take them over. Otherwise, if it's like that, Chairperson, we feel sorry for you. But I think I wish I could see them today, those members of parliament, because you've set a good example today. You are the leading sector, and you'll stay the leading sector. Thank you very much. Until tomorrow then. So.